Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, info warriors of all ages. This is the War Room, Infowars.com, band.video, coming to you live from the Infowars headquarters here in Austin, Texas, on Election Day 2025. It's not Election Day everywhere, but the elections that are being held are extremely important and will dictate a lot about what the future of America holds, especially the mayoral race in New York City and the governor race in New Jersey. We'll cover all those and tell you whatever updates, you know, we can find. I don't think we're going to get a lot of results by the time this show's over. Polls close at 9 p.m. in New York City, which would be 8 p.m. here, but we'll see. We'll bring you whatever we get, and if there's returns showing up and polling taking place, then we'll bring you those results as they come in, but we got a lot to talk about today. So let's just get into it, shall we? Here it is, your Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Tuesday, the 4th of November, 2025. Dick Cheney dead at 84. Alex Jones posted a video responding to that article at Infowars.com. Former U.S. Vice President Dick Cheney died on Monday night at the age of 84, according to Punchbowl News reporter Jake Sherman. Sherman posted on X what appears to be a statement from the family in which they explained that Cheney died due to complications of pneumonia and cardiovascular disease, cardiac and vascular disease. Of course, he's had like multiple heart replacements, I believe, for the last decade or so. He has not even had a heartbeat. He actually had a pump that replaced his heart that just continually pumped blood, so there was no beating, actually. He was sort of a Darth Vader-like figure in his later years. I guess in his earlier years as well, if you want to take it back to there. We don't celebrate anybody's death here. We're not the left. We're not the psychotics, but it's not a lot to celebrate when it comes to old Cheney. And I just have to wonder, these guys look back at the world they've created. Are they satisfied? Are they happy with their participation? Do they feel fulfilled with what they are leaving to their children and grandchildren? I can't believe that they're really all that happy with the world as it sits now and their role they played in getting us to this point, especially when you look at things like Skull and Bones and these old organizations that these guys were all a part of, and now they're literally occupied by Puerto Rican transsexuals. And it's like, is this what you wanted? Is this what the new world order that you wanted to create? Because it's here now, and we're having a lot of trouble getting out of it. Meanwhile, Election Day 2025, must-watch races in New York City, New Jersey, and Virginia. Here's some major ones. States include New Jersey, New York, and Virginia. They begin voting at 6 a.m. They'll finish most of them around 7 p.m. Eastern time, 8 p.m. for New York City. Of course, New York City is the Democratic Socialist Zoran Mamdani versus former Governor Andrew Cuomo and Republican nominee Curtis Sliwa. And of course, this is almost certainly going to Mamdani because Sliwa and Cuomo shouldn't even be running at the same time, one or the other, and maybe we'd have a chance, but they split the non-idiot vote and basically handing it over to Mamdani. We'll be watching that. But there's also the lieutenant governor race in Virginia, California Prop 50, which has to do with the redistricting, as well as the Pennsylvania Supreme Court is being voted on as well. Meanwhile, the Senate, U.S. Senate, votes down GOP-led stopgap for the 14th time. For the 14th time, they voted to not open the government, which I think has tied us now for the longest recorded shutdown of the government in history. And that looks to be expanding, and there's a lot of trouble coming with that in terms of air traffic controllers and possibly shutting down airspace over huge swaths of the country, which would have absolutely incredible economic devastating effects. We'll talk about that a little bit more. But because of this, Trump is getting a little bit frustrated. We'll read his statements on the other side, but Trump threatens to keep SNAP benefits frozen until Democrats end the shutdown, basically saying, if you want to play these games, let's play. You want to play chicken? Let's go. Let's go. And finally, we have this. Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine sales tumble after government guidance on the shots narrows. So they've basically removed these from the recommended and required list of vaccines. Another massive, massive blow to Big Pharma and another major step forward for overall health in this country being ripped away from the corporations that would rather us be constantly sick so they can constantly be paid to cure us. That's your Daily Dispatch, brought to you by thealexjonesstore.com. Live election day coverage as New York City poised for socialist Islamicist takeover, and New York polling stations face swatting and bomb threats. Yes, all of the shenanigans we're unfortunately getting used to when it comes to election day. And it's all these, it's inconsistencies, it's mistakes, it's bomb threats, it's swatting attempts. And they all universally, for some bizarre reason, they all seem to hamper and harm Republican candidates. And it always seems to go that way. Hell, I remember talking about this before I ever worked at InfoWars, debating people on Reddit of all places, where they're going, well, you know, you can't say that this is cheating. It's just, you know, it's an accident that these things are happening. People were posting videos of, like, you know, they'd be pressing the Trump button and the Hillary Clinton button would be lighting up, and they're going, no, I'm pressing Trump, and Hillary Clinton would just keep lighting up. And, you know, for the last 10 years, it seems like every time there's some sort of, you know, malfunction, some sort of mistake that, you know, affects the voting, it almost always goes against Republicans. What a bizarre coincidence that is, isn't it? So there's a lot of those going on right now. And we'll talk about them and, of course, bring you any results that come in, although I'm not sure if we're going to have any solid grasp of who exactly is in the lead by the time the show ends today, which will be right about when the polls are ending across the country. But we'll bring you whatever comes up and whatever new shenanigans are pulled out of the bag of tricks from the Democrats. You know, Alex was just doing that chemtrail, showing that chemtrail report. And chemtrails are one of these funny so-called conspiracy theories. You know, I have a video that goes viral every once in a while, and it's me just sort of listing off conspiracy theories that have been proven true. And it starts off with Elon Musk saying, well, you know, some of those conspiracies are actually true. And the other guy goes, like what? And it just goes into a list of me listing off a ton of stuff. And every time it gets posted, I see comments that are like, I was with you until the chemtrails. Then you went really off the rails. And it's like, that's the most confirmed one out of all of them. It's not even a conspiracy anymore, but it shows you how powerful their programming is, their control of people's minds are. They attach this word, kind of like conspiracy theory, chemtrail, to this idea that, yeah, there are airplanes that spray things into the air. And it's this, the left or the normies, whoever it is making these comments, they have this amazing ability to, like, believe that things are conspiracies even when they're just right out in front of their faces. And there's this cognitive dissonance that occurs that's something to behold, where you can go, yeah, these are chemtrails. And they go, whatever, crazy. Where's your tinfoil hat, you conspiracy theorist? Chemtrails, yeah, right. What, do you believe in the abominable snowman? And then you go, well, what about strategic aerosol injections? What about blocking out the sun by strategically spraying aluminum in the air? And they're like, oh, yeah, very interesting. I think that could be a really interesting way to go here. And it's like, well, those are chemtrails, but they'll still think chemtrails are a conspiracy theory while actively acknowledging and believing in what chemtrails are. It's just, if you call them chemtrails, you're crazy. And if you call them strategic aerosol injections, you're John Brennan of the CIA. I don't know why it's this way, but hopefully there's one thing we can help encourage people to do through InfoWars is to break that paradigm, break that control grid that they have in your brain that tells you some things you can believe and some things you can't believe. And even if they're the same thing, you have to maintain that you believe it when it's said this way and you don't believe it when it's said that way, and do not even try to justify these two beliefs and the cognitive dissonance they create. Just exist in this world of nonsense. So we're trying to break you out of the world of nonsense and let you know that you can call these things whatever you want. They exist. And when you understand they exist, that should be not the end result of your investigation. That should be the beginning. Because then you should say, wait, they really are spraying things in the air? First of all, what are they spraying? Second of all, why has it been called a conspiracy theory for so long, if it's accurate? Why were they covering it up? If it's true and they're doing it, why are they so insistent that it's not happening? What are they really doing? And then you look into that and you realize, okay, this is just one of a variety of environmental, intercessions that the globalists do that are in fact designed and deployed to weaken and destroy you. That's why it's happening, folks. That's why they're spraying heavy metals into the air. And they're doing other stuff too, by the way. Now they're airdropping vaccines. That's a new pilot program that they've just launched. And I've you know, got that again from mainstream sources. You don't have to listen to the crazy kooks at InfoWars. We're just the only ones that are going to tell you about something that's actually happening, which is they are now flying around dropping edible vaccines into wildlife areas trying to stop rabies. Is that a good thing? Maybe. Rabies certainly isn't a good thing. Is this the most appropriate way to do it, or is this just sort of opening the door to making vaccines something ubiquitous and unavoidable, that they'll be airdropping vaccines for humans next, or maybe putting them in the water supply because they know better than you? And if you don't have the ability to opt out of a vaccine, then why should they even have to tell you you're taking it in the first place? If your willingness isn't necessary, if your participation isn't necessary, why would your awareness be necessary? You don't have the ability to opt out anyway, so why should they even tell you they're doing it to you? These are the types of things that are deployed against humanity on a continual basis and have been for a while. We've been trying to tell you. Finally, people are waking up to this. And finally, it's becoming so widely known that the powers that be are simply admitting it's what they're doing. To control rabies and wildlife, the USDA drops vaccine treats from the sky. Ah, wonderful. That was November 2023. That was 2 years ago. But I guess they're ramping it up now and they're launching this nationwide. That must have been a pilot program of some sort. But now they're actually implementing it and doing it. So like I said, we'll be keeping track of the elections. We have so much news to get to, though. I don't even know where to begin. Let's start with clip 15, because this is sort of a standalone story that I think is extremely important because it shows the methods that are used to deceive people. And once these things go to air, it doesn't matter if they're corrected. In this case, it wasn't even corrected, but we know how it goes. They put out a headline, they put out a bombshell, crazy story, and then, you know, later they have to revise it, but the revision never gets a tenth of the airtime that the original story did. And so that original story just sticks in people's minds. It becomes, you know, another brick in sort of the facade that they understand reality to be. And in this case, it was Donald Trump on January 6th, very clearly saying, we're going to peacefully, you know, encourage our representatives to do the right thing and call for that 10-day pause and investigation and to question the Electoral College, not to certify it, but instead to launch that 10-day investigation. And he said, we're going to go and peacefully protest at the Capitol to give confidence to these people that were under a lot of pressure not to object to the certification of the Electoral College. And BBC edited that in an egregiously dishonest way, in a way that could not have happened if it wasn't a deliberate choice to misrepresent Donald Trump and frame him for the violence that occurred on January 6, 2021. So let's go to clip 15. Here we are 4.5 years later, and finally people figured out that BBC lied that day. And really, they, you know, something needs to happen for this. Something needs to be done because of this, because you can't just let mainstream, supposedly well-respected and, you know, authoritative outlets get away with this crap. Let's watch.
Well, it's the biggest story in town. It turns out American President Donald Trump was onto something.
Where are you from?
BBC.
Okay. Here's another beauty.
It's a good line. Impartial, free and fair.
Yeah, sure.
Well, that criticism of the BBC and John Sopel, he was talking to there, apparently was well-founded, because the so-called impartial and accurate public service broadcaster is nothing but.
Can you stay categorically?
You are fake news.
Sir,
go ahead.
Can you state categorically that nobody... No, Mr. President...
Because tonight the BBC is facing serious questions over its credibility after the Daily Telegraph exposed a panorama segment that heavily doctored a speech by the American president in 2021, hours before the infamous January the 6th Capitol riot. As you're about to hear, the corporation spliced together two quotes, 1 hour apart, to make it seem like he encouraged an insurrection.
They played the following clip.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol, and I'll be there with you, and we fight. We fight like hell.
But Trump didn't, in fact, say this at all. The BBC spliced together two clips that took place 54 minutes apart. So let's go through it again.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol, and I'll be there with you.
Now, see there, between capital and, that's a cut. Here's what Trump actually said.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol, and we're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women.
It's different. It wasn't until nearly an hour later that he then said the second part of the BBC's version.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol, and we fight. We fight like hell.
That is damning stuff. Now, this, of course, is coming from the holier-than-thou BBC that even has its own so-called fact-checking service named BBC Verify that they claim counters disinformation. Oh, the irony.
Yes, the irony. BBC accused of selectively editing a Trump clip from day of the Capitol attack. Now, they deliberately spliced together clips to make it appear as though he said, we're going to go to the Capitol and fight. Two statements that were made an hour apart. I mean, it is deliberate. You don't accidentally do that. They deliberately misrepresented what Trump said. Again, just to plant in people's heads that he was responsible for this. And as I've talked about a million times before and about this particular instance, I remember talking about January 6th, sort of normie friends of mine, and they were going, well, you know, Trump called for violence. It's what he does. Remember back in the campaign of 2016 when he would tell people to beat up, you know, protesters? And it's like, wait. So I'm not arguing about January 6th. I'm arguing against the perception of Trump that was started 7 years earlier. And every day with more headlines and more stories piled on top of the original lie or all of the other lies that convince people, that stick in people's minds, that Trump is a violent person. He calls for his supporters to commit violence. Never true in 2016 during the election. Not true on January 6th. But that's the perception that has been implanted in their heads and that they constantly reinforce through deception, like you just saw. I would maybe strip their license to operate in America. Why not, right? They would do the same thing to us. So why shouldn't they have to pay for their deception? Something that we would genuinely never do. Well, we don't have to. I mean, we've got the real things. The Democrats actually calling for violence. We don't need to splice anything. We don't need to dishonestly portray anything. It's all right out there in the open and obvious to anybody who's paying attention at all. It's good to see BBC being humiliated like that because they absolutely deserve it. Now, again, where do I even go from here? Let's talk about Trump getting pissed off, getting very angry at the fact that the government is still shut down and the Republicans, who are supposed to be backing him up, supposed to be getting his agenda moving forward, are doing absolutely nothing and have done absolutely nothing. And so he wants to end the filibuster. And in a way, Trump is acting more like presidents are supposed to act. We talked about this when he was doing the State of the Union last time. The idea of the State of the Union, it was never like a big performance for the whole country. Right now the TV exists, that's what it's become. But originally the State of the Union address was what it was supposed to be. It was the head of the country, and he was supposed to be giving direction to the legislature to go, here's what we're doing, here's where we're at, here's what we're trying to achieve, here's the bills I need you guys to pass. And the executive was supposed to act like the executive of a company, not a completely separate and totally, you know, non-intertwined body that just fought against each other. There were checks and balances that were there to make sure, you know, one branch of the government couldn't become tyrannical, but you were supposed to work together, and the president was supposed to set the agenda, and then the Congress was supposed to follow his lead and write the bills into law that he would then sign. That's how it's supposed to work. Now it seems like the president is dealing with international stuff and trying to stop wars and, you know, dealing with law enforcement and the border, and then the Congress is just sending all of our money to people who hate us. And these are just like two separate things that almost never interact. No, it should be the president's agenda is what the Congress follows, because that's what all of America voted for, the president being the only one who all of America votes for. So, of course, it's supposed to represent their constituencies, obviously, but the president's supposed to dictate more or less the overall path of the legislature while he's in office. Here's what Trump posted, and I'll read. I don't know if I'll read the whole thing because it's a long post. Brandon Morello reposted it on X saying, President Trump says it's likely the Democrats will win midterms and the presidency because Republicans can't get anything done. Trump says this, quote, the Democrats are far more likely to win the midterms and the next presidential election if we don't do the termination of the filibuster, the nuclear option, because it will be impossible for Republicans to get common sense policies done with these crazed Democrat lunatics being able to block everything by withholding their votes. For 3 years, nothing will be passed and Republicans will be blamed. Elections, including the midterms, will be rightfully brutal. If we do terminate the filibuster, we will get everything approved like no Congress in history. We will have free, fair, and safe elections, no men and women's sports or transgender for everybody, strong borders, major tax and energy cuts. We will secure our Second Amendment, which Democrats will also terminate immediately. If we don't do it, they're far more likely to do well in the upcoming elections, which could mean a packed Supreme Court, two more states, and four more Democrat senators, D.C. and Puerto Rico, and eight more electoral votes. Remember, Republicans, they are going to end the filibuster as soon as they get the chance. We know this because they've already tried, and the only two people who didn't go along with it are now out of office. But they have a much less chance of winning if we have great policy wins after wins after wins. In fact, they will lose big and for a very long time. Terminate the filibuster now, end the ridiculous shutdown immediately, and then, most importantly, pass every wonderful Republican policy that we have dreamt of for years but never gotten. We will be the party that cannot be beaten, the smart party. So he gets it. Like, he seems to understand and is getting increasingly frustrated at the lack of support that he has, which, again, it's like we're just Groundhog Day. We're stuck in the same problem that we were in 2016. And it's like, what does it take? What is it going to take to get through to the Republicans what the situation is right now? Do they really think that they are going to play footsie with the Democrats, help him get Trump out of office, and everything will just go back to normal? What has given them that idea? What delusion are they operating under? It's insane. You don't have to listen to us. We shouldn't have to be telling you this. The Democrats themselves are not shy about their tyrannical ambitions, about their desire to, as soon as they get into office, throw all of you in jail. You think they're going to celebrate? You didn't go with everything Trump wanted, so you're one of the good ones. You get to stay. First of all, Quisling, that's the type of approval you want. You want a pat on your heads from people who despise you. Your enemies are going to give you a treat. You're going to wag your tail like a dog, you absolute cowards. Do you think that's going to happen? No, they are going to throw you in prison. They are going to not only reopen the border. America cannot survive another 4 years of open border. It can barely survive this one. They're not only going to open the border for God knows however many more tens of millions of hostile foreigners to flood our country, but they'll pass some, amnesty law for everybody that's already arrived. If we don't get the deportations done now, the country's over. If we don't correct the election procedures, the country is over. If the Democrats ever get back in power again, the country is over. What do we have to do to get Republicans to understand this? What do we have to do? Because right now, it's like I cannot even fathom what they think they're doing, how they think this is going, how much time they think we have. Like, I can understand if they're trying to play some sort of political game and think that they'll, MAGA is just this phase and eventually it'll return to the days of George W. Bush and, John Kerry and Mitt Romney. We're never going back there. We don't want to go back there even if we could. But the left is radical beyond belief and they're going to throw you in prison. So even if you think you're going to get something out of this, even if you think you're going to retain power and this is all just self-aggrandizement and biding your time so you can, get the establishment back in power, you're delusional. You're an idiot. That's never going to happen. It's not going to happen. Your only option now is total commitment. This is like the beginning of Dr. Strangelove. This is the bombs are on their way, boys. The only thing to do now is follow it up with a real attack. Because the counterattack's coming, right? We need like a Jack D. Ripper, General Jack D. Ripper in there to go, I've already launched the attack. You either get behind me or you're all dead. Because that's the situation that we're in. That's what you need to understand. You never seen Dr. Strangelove. The whole thing is that this rogue commander of a Air Force base in near Siberia just on his own gives an order for all of his nuclear bombers to start bombing sites in Russia, knowing that he was kicking off a nuclear war. And his belief was just like, the people in Washington don't understand what's going on here. In fact, what did he say? I used to remember doing this monologue in theater in college, where he says, Mandrake, I need to do it with a pen in the mouth. Mandrake, you remember what Clemenceau once said about war? I guess I said, no, sir, I don't believe I do. He says, war is too important to be left to the generals. Now, when he said that 50 years ago, it may have been true. But now war is too important to be left to the politicians. They have neither the time nor the inclination for strategic thought. And that's sort of where we're at. These politicians, they don't have the inclination for strategic thought. They refuse to recognize that we're in a war. So Jack D. Ripper and Dr. Strangelove decides, I'm just starting the war. I'm just kicking it off. And now they don't have a choice. Now they're in the war. And so their only option now is follow it up with another major attack, because there's no pulling us back from the brink now. That's where we're at. The war has been launched. You might not see that. You might think that, you know, Trump's trying to be reasonable and he's trying to play the game, and you think that the Democrats are going to respect that. No. In their perspective, we've already launched the nukes. According to the left, we have already declared ourselves the enemies of humanity and have to just be destroyed. So it's like there is no going back now. The nukes are in the air. You know, Operation Plan R has been activated, and there's no recalling the wing. All that's left now is total commitment. That's what the Republicans need to understand, and it's not an option. It's for their own survival, their own sake, the sake of their children, the sake of this country, the sake of us having a future whatsoever. They have to understand the situation that we're in and give total commitment. We need to bring up the Jack D. Ripper speech, and we'll play it at the beginning of the next segment. That's what we need at this point. Not nuclear weapons, political nuclear weapons. Destroy the enemy. All hands on deck. Full attack now. Operation Plan R has been activated. We'll be right back with more. It's War Room, InfoWars.com. This is the War Room, InfoWars.com, band.video, brought to you, of course, by TheAlexJonesStore.com, your one-stop shop for truth, justice, and the American way. The 30 days of Black Friday and Cyber Monday sale is on right now, and you're getting 25% off site-wide. So there's something that you've had your eye on but couldn't quite bring yourself to pay full price? Well, good news. Everything is a quarter off now. 25% off the entire store, the supplements, the T-shirts, the hats, everything is 25% off. Ultramethylene Red, is it sold out already? I was hearing Alex say it might be out, or maybe we just got a new shipment in. If you can order it on the store, then it'll be delivered, and it'll say, you know, reserve your bottle if it's out of stock right now. But go check it out. All the supplements, all the shirts, all the hats, all the hoodies, plus 50% off any supplement when you sign up for auto ship. So you'll never run out. So even if we sell out for everybody else, we reserve a portion for the people that have pre-ordered to make sure that you get that delivery once a month. And you get it 50% off, which is just an absolute massive savings. And you can cancel it any time. So get that 50% off. Make sure that you can have it even if it's not in stock for everybody else. And of course, if you're a VIP member, it costs $30 a month to become a VIP member, but you get $40 in store credit every month. So you're getting an extra $10 if you sign up to be a VIP member. And that's the number one way to keep us on the air. And of course, you get other benefits as well, such as access to the Alex Jones tapes, which are archives of the Alex Jones Show, stretch all the way back to the early 2000s. And it's the only place online that you can get it, thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison, if you want to let them know who sent you. And I think zooming out a little bit when it comes to the state that America is in, I've come to some pretty uncomfortable conclusions, unfortunately, that go against my ideal. My utopian vision would be a libertarian one, would be, you know, a very open society with highly democratic values. But I'm not a Democrat. I don't mean I'm not a part of the Democratic Party. I mean, I don't like democracy as a concept. I'm like the founding fathers in that way. Democracy in history is a precursor to collapse. every time. And the founders who studied history knew that. They knew that Athens was a democracy and it was its democratic stupidity that allowed it to fall. Whereas you had Sparta with King, and there's examples in history where it's so fascinating because there's got to be something intrinsic about this, because you have the same thing over and over and over again throughout history to this day, from all the way back in the, you know, Bronze Age with Athens to the highly technological world today. It doesn't change. And it's that crowds are easier to fool than individuals. Kind of bizarre, but that's the truth. And when you talk about democracy, especially in today's age, you're not talking about rule by the people. You're talking about rule by the media, because the media is the one that dictates the view of the world held by the people. And so when you talk about democracy in the modern age, all you're talking about is rule by the media. The media can dictate people's behavior, dictate the view of the world. Even now that it's so open, even now with X being open, even now with mainstream media collapsing, they still, to a very large degree, dictate the parameters of our reality to most normies that don't know how to break out or aren't even aware that they're being directed and dictated to. And so democracy now is just ruled by the media. But back in Athens, it just meant that if you had a convincing person, if you had a charismatic individual who could get up in front of a crowd and sway 50% of them, then they would go with that person. Whereas, and there's instances of this where, like, you know, they're coming under attack. I can't remember the exact situation, but it had to do with the Persians coming across and emissaries being sent to Sparta and being sent to Athens. And basically, it was a bad idea to get involved in this conflict, but the emissaries wanted these two cities-states to be involved. And so they go to Sparta, and there's a king of Sparta. And the emissary tries to convince the king, and the king says, no, we're not going along with this. I don't like it. It doesn't smell right. We're not doing it. And so they avoided the catastrophe that came after. But the same guy goes to Athens, and he doesn't have to convince one person who has the responsibility, like a father for his family, the king over the people. He gets to address a crowd, and by appealing to the emotions of the crowd and by weaponizing the groupthink of the crowd, he gets Athens to go along with the plan, and it ends up massively damaging Athens, eventually leading to her destruction. So that's the type of, those are the types of stories that the founding fathers looked at when they were determining what type of organization that our country should have our government. They looked back at things like democracies in Athens and said, yeah, this is a recipe for disaster. This is how you get the tyranny of the majority. Well, 50%, you know, 50% of them say that the rest of, 51% say the rest of you, you know, don't deserve rights. So it's democracy. 49% of you no longer have rights. A republic protects us from that by devolving to the individual and saying that even if 99% of people want to violate the rights are beyond democratic reproach and will be maintained regardless of what the majority wants, because we respect the rights of minority. So the reason I'm saying all of this is because when I say I'm a Republican, I don't necessarily mean a member of the Republican Party. I mean my belief in what makes the best form of government is a Republican one. Democracy is two wolves and a lamb voting on what to have for lunch. Liberty is a well-armed lamb contesting the vote. Quote by Benjamin Franklin from Turning Point USA. Brilliantly put, of course. So all this is to say, we've got a problem that democracy can't fix. Because what do you do if you have 80,000 Somalis that have been dropped off in a single congressional district or a single city that all vote as a block, that all vote for their ethnic interests, that all vote for people, despite those people expressing things that are deeply anti-American and shouldn't even be, like, permitted? I don't, but again, like, you can't, you know, they should be allowed to express them, but the American people should ostensibly be able to see through this crap. But again, what do you do when you've got a Somali person in America speaking the Somali language, waving the Somali flag, saying, vote for me and I'll help Somalia? And there's 80,000 Somalis there to vote for him. And they all do, to 90, 95 plus percent. They're not voting as individuals. They're not voting on, you know, who has the better policy. They're voting as an ethnic bloc to get their person into office to loot, rob, and change America to be more like them. What do you do other than disenfranchise those people? I mean, are we obligated to have foreigners ruling over us because Barack Obama decided to drop 80,000 Somalis in a single congressional district? Why should the American people that have lived there, whose families built that area, who have ancestral claim to that land, why should they have to live under a hostile foreign government, which is 100% what these people represent? I'm not saying because they're a foreigner. Again, if you have a foreigner, I talked about this a little bit on Ian Carroll's stream earlier today, and we showed the video last week of the woman dressed head to toe in American flag. She's fresh off the boat from Vietnam or Korea or China or somewhere, and she's going, America is very special, and you've got to keep all these other Chinese people out. They're all spies. You got to shut the border, y'all. And it's like, okay, there's somebody I could vote for. There's somebody who understands America and isn't here just to siphon our wealth away or get something for herself. Here's somebody that believes in America. So it's not that because they're foreign, but these people in particular, the Zohran Mamdanis, the Omar Fettas, the AOCs, the Ilhan Omars, they give speeches where they talk about how the reason they're in office is to benefit their own people. It has nothing to do with the American experiment or our republic. They're just weaponizing it. So what do you do when those people get votes, when those people get put into office? Are you going to tell them that they can't? Are you going to tell the 80,000 Somalis that they're not allowed to vote? Like, yeah, that might be the only way to stop it, actually. Actually, that might be the only thing you can do is just say, you know what? We're not letting you vote because we tried to let you vote and you just voted for a Somali person that doesn't even speak English. So, like, that can't happen here in this country. Like, I don't know what the other solution is. What is the other solution? To let hostile foreigners take power in our country over our citizens when they're openly, vindictive against them? I mean, Zohran Mamdani puts out official policy positions that are like tax white people more. Do white people have to put up with that? In a democracy, they would. We're not a democracy. Why should white people be subject to somebody who openly despises them just because enough of their co-ethnics have been imported into a particular area? I don't know. I don't know how we deal with this, to be honest with you. Not something we should have to deal with. I think, deportations would go part of the way, but I'd like to see a lot more aggressive action taken when it comes to lying on their intake forms, lying about their support of radical political beliefs, lying about their willingness to uphold American beliefs, American foundational concepts like free speech and freedom of religion. What do you do when there are 50 million of these people in your country and half of them are, in fact, we don't even know how many of them are voting? I think the only thing to do is like literally disenfranchise them, which sounds like something that you shouldn't, like nobody's even allowed to say. But again, we're talking about breaking the mold here, talking about not letting them box you in with the scary words. It's okay to hate democracy, just like it's okay to hate anarchism or communism or socialism, just like it's okay to hate republicanism if you're an idiot. It's okay to hate monarchism. It's fine. It's fine to hate democracy. I hate democracy. I don't want democracy. And our country was designed specifically by people who also recognized the danger that democracy posed and specifically, explicitly made our system undemocratic because they could see where it would go. And every move America's, it seems like every change to the Constitution that's been made since then has been about increasing the democratic contribution of the population. And at every turn, it's gotten worse. It's gotten worse. Same thing happens with the 17th Amendment in the way that we elect senators. Another change that happened to occur in 1913, along with the starting of the Fed and the income tax and everything else that happened in 1913. One of the things that they did was institute the 17th Amendment, which changed the way that we elected senators to be more democratic. But is it better? I think the outcome has been significantly worse. The way senators used to be sent to Washington was the legislature of the state would choose the senator to send. Now, I think it's a lot harder to rig 200 legislature elections in Texas than it is to rig one Senate election. But in 1913, the 17th Amendment took it from, I'm going to vote for my local representative who's going to go to the state house in Austin, and then he's going to work with other Republicans to find a suitable senator to send who will then operate on behalf of the party that we elected to govern Texas. That's how it's supposed to work. That's how the senator position was designed to work. Then in 1913, they said, no, instead we're just going to do a popular vote from the whole state. So instead of having to rig a whole bunch of little elections so that you can control the state legislature, we just have to rig one big election statewide and we can get in whoever we want. These are not good things. We have to start going in the opposite direction. We have to start moving away from democracy because it's not a positive. It's not a good development. It doesn't end up with good results. And we just have to move rapidly on this. And I was talking to my producer Scott during the break. He was going, you know, the filibuster, that was like the one thing that stopped Biden from actually being a tyrant, is we were able to do the filibuster. And he made a good point. It's worth emphasizing. I'm in favor of ending the filibuster. I'm in favor of packing the Supreme Court, even like Donald Trump or like Alex Jones was saying earlier, actually. And Donald Trump has hinted at too. And I've always explained this, like packing the court like a loaded gun. And, you know, right now the Republicans have that loaded gun on the desk in front of them within arm's reach. And the Democrats are across the room going, hey, when we get in power, we're going to walk across that room, grab that gun and shoot you in the head with it. And we're sitting here with the gun going, you shouldn't do that, though. And they're like, but we are. We promise we're going to do it. I'm walking to it. And they're walking towards us. And we're sitting there going, you shouldn't, though. You really shouldn't pick up the gun and shoot me. And here they come marching towards the gun, about to shoot you. And it's like, okay, time to pick up the gun. Time for us to use the when the other side promises that as soon as they can, they'll use the gun. Then you go, okay, well, I guess I'm going to use the gun then because I have it. You don't. You're threatening me with the thing I have. This is nonsense. That's been my position for a while. Everything they threaten to do, we should just do. The instant they threaten it, because what are they going to say? What are they going to say? AOC's out there going, we're going to pack the court. We need 9 new Supreme Court justices. Trump should just go, oh, we do? Okay, noted. Will do, AOC. Thank you for the suggestion. What's she going to say? Well, no, I meant for us. It's like, yeah, we know. Dummy, you're not in power. Why would you say it? Because they know Republicans are cowards, because they know Republicans will never do this. But what Scott was saying, what I was agreeing with, was I'm in favor of these things as part of a larger plan, as part of a comprehensive, holistic agenda that needs to be expressed and understood and then followed. If you eliminate the filibuster, if you pack the Supreme Court, it better be part and parcel of a wider plan to maintain power in Republicans' hands for the foreseeable future. Because if we destroy the filibuster and we don't use that to then seriously change things, seriously change the voting process, which is just absolute trash, and we're seeing that today, swattings and machines breaking down and just it's all nonsense. And if we can fix that, if we can eliminate the, you know, census that counted illegal immigrants to give even more voting power to the left, if we can change all of these things significantly and powerfully, then I'm in favor of doing it. But if it's just, let's end the filibuster and then keep twiddling our thumbs, sending weapons to Ukraine and Israel and just not getting anything done ever, then don't destroy the filibuster. Like, I'd rather still have the filibuster in place if we're just not going to do anything powerful and effective to change the course of this country. But it needs to happen as part and parcel, as the first step of a wider plan to literally disenfranchise the left in whatever ways are legal and possible at this moment. You don't think they're trying to do it? Obviously, that's their intention. But Trump seems to understand it. His statement is powerful and good. The mail-in ballots are a total fraud. They need to be eliminated. All this stuff, it just needs to be eliminated. And, you know, I was thinking about this when it came to the FACE Act. You guys know the FACE Act. We played the video, I think it was yesterday, but a congressman talking about showing a picture of, you know, a father of 6 or 7 Catholic father who had his door kicked in by the FBI in the middle of the night, and he was hauled away at gunpoint and arrested for praying outside of an abortion clinic. So how did they make prayer illegal? How did they set up a system in which it was not just legal, but there wasn't even any, you know, outrage about it, that they made it so the FBI would kick the door in and arrest a father of 7 for praying? How does that come about? Well, it comes about because they say that, well, the right to abortion is a right Americans have. And anybody standing outside of an abortion and blocking the entrance is basically robbing them of that right. So it takes prayer outside of an abortion clinic away from being what it is, a guy praying outside of an abortion clinic, and morphs it in a way, transmutes it into being depriving somebody else of their rights. Now it's a crime. Now praying in front of an abortion clinic has been reconfigured, put in a context that makes it a crime because you're denying somebody's rights through intimidation. That's not true. And the way they got this passed was by saying, well, we'll also do it for birth clinics as well. We'll also do it for the pro-life. So anybody, tries to block a pro-life entrance, they'll also be hit with the FACE Act. Then nobody's ever punished for that. It's never actually applied to anybody on the left. And plus, they don't stand outside protesting pro-life clinics. They firebomb them. So a little bit different of a situation. But that's how these things occur. And that is, of course, offensive to me, because it's just a way of manipulating free speech to make it seem like a crime to arrest people for prayer. So that's very wrong. But it's also a tactic that can be used to deal with, like, a lot of these protesters. Say, okay, protesting is legal, but when you do it outside of a ICE facility, you are, just by virtue of participating, hampering their ability to do their job. Therefore, just like the FACE Act says, anybody protesting outside of an abortion clinic is committing a federal crime, anybody protesting in front of an ICE facility is therefore committing a federal crime. Because you're not, it's not that we're making protesting illegal, we're actually just expanding the definition of interfering in a federal investigation to include those who are standing outside, shining flashlights in the eyes of ICE agents. And I don't want to throw people in jail for protesting. What they're doing now is they're ramming cars into, ICE cars and physically attacking the officers there. And as Alex was laying out earlier today, the media plays only the response from the officers and then it frames it as ICE out there brutalizing and abusing and arresting American citizens, which isn't the case. They're responding to attacks on them, and they're perfectly aware, but they're dishonestly presenting it. And it just seems like if they wanted to actually achieve this, this is not the way I would be doing it. In other words, if you tasked me with, like, designing a raid, an immigration raid, the last thing I would do would be like, all right, send two ICE agents out in marked vehicles to go into a neighborhood where everybody's illegal and try to, like, grab somebody off the street. It's just, you either go in with overwhelming force and you treat it like a military operation because that's what it is. Like, if it was me, I'd be bringing soldiers back from overseas and deploying them in city streets and making it perfectly clear. If you arrived in the last 5 years, you arrived under false pretenses. You were tricked by the Biden administration, Alejandro Mayorkas. You have to go back. It's not an option. We're not giving you a choice. We will give you a free ride home. But if you don't take that offer, we are going to arrest you. And we're actually going to treat you like an invading force. Now, fair warning, you have no excuse to be here anymore. It's not that you're, oh, I wanted to leave, but I was too poor. No, we'll pay for your trip back. So you have no excuse to be here without permission. And if you are here without permission, you will be treated like an enemy combatant. You will be arrested. You won't just be deported at that point. Because right now, what's the punishment? What is the punishment for avoiding deportation? What is the punishment for not deporting yourself? It's if you get caught, you'll just be deported later. Okay, that's not actually incentive. Actually, then everybody's just going to stay. It's like either turn yourself in and you'll be deported, or stay in America and you might slip through the cracks, or you might get deported. And it's like everybody's going to take that second option. Because worst case scenario, you're just deported, which is the only scenario if you take the other choice. Does it make sense? Does this make sense what I'm saying? There has to be a greater punishment. You have to say, we're giving you the offer to go home. If you don't go home, you're not getting deported. You're being sent to a labor camp. You're being sent to crack stones on the side of the highway for 5 years. Then you'll be sent home. So the choice is yours. Go home now, free flight, no excuses. You can come back whenever you want. You just have to cross the right way, get an appropriate visa, and not overstay it. Perfectly fine. Or you are now an enemy combatant. We're not going to send one or two ICE agents to try desperately to scramble to drag you off the street. We are going to surround your neighborhood and move in like a python tightening on its prey, and you will be rounded up and sent off to labor camps at the coldest parts of our nation. Don't you want to go home now? That's what any serious country would be. And so these are the types of things that Congress should be doing. These are the types, the face law. We need the new, whatever new face law. We need a new one. Because obviously, these people protesting aren't just expressing their opinion. If that was the case, they could do it at the Capitol. They could do it anywhere else. When you're on the street deliberately blocking ICE facilities, it should be treated like somebody praying in front of an abortion clinic. It's no longer just prayer. It is now a political act of intimidation, which is illegal. Therefore, you can be arrested. Something like that needs to happen. If you think that's outrageous, if you think I'm talking about something authoritarian that could be used, well, then what is the FACE Act? Then how did that pass? How did they take prayer outside of an abortion clinic and transmute that into a federal crime where you got your door kicked in? They did it by passing a law that says so. That's what Congress should be doing. That's the type of thing they would be doing if they had any semblance, any recognition of the state that we're really in. The aggressiveness of the left, the outrageous behavior of the left, and where this goes if they're not wrangled in with everything we've got. Trump can't do that. Trump can enforce that law once it's passed, but the Republicans need to pass that law. And that would just be one of a slate of laws that we need to have established as an agenda where they say, okay, first we get rid of the filibuster, then it's this and this and this and this and this, and then we can be safe knowing that the filibuster is gone because we'll have achieved our objectives. We'll get more into this on the other side because Trump's approval rating is in the toilet. It's dismal. It's not anywhere where it should be. And it's Congress's fault to a large degree. I gotta continue to rag on the concept of democracy for a little while. Because this is the type of thing, it's like, this shouldn't exist. The fact that it does exist is a problem that needs to be fixed. Now, this isn't in America, but it's something that would happen in America, I think. I don't think anybody would be surprised if something like this happened. We're going to clip 23 here. This is a woman in Canada, and I wonder if I should set this up or just respond to it. I'll just respond to it. This is a woman in Canada named Leah Gazin, interesting name, who is introducing a bill in Canadian Parliament to criminalize residential school denialism, okay, like Holocaust denialism or climate change denialism. This is now a new thing that will be illegal to deny, despite the fact that it doesn't exist and never happened. Let's watch.
Hello, my name is Leah Gazin. I'm the NDP MP for Winnipeg Centre. Today I will be reintroducing my bill to recognize residential school denialism as a form of inciting hate. You know, it's been over a decade since the release of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in Canada. And since that time, we have seen, since the discovery of unmarked graves, an increase in denialism about what occurred in the residential schools. This is horrific, particularly because all members of Parliament unanimously supported my motion in 2022 to recognize what happened in residential schools as an act of genocide, the first genocide that was recognized within Canadian borders. At a time where we are looking at, once again, building a nation on the backs of Indigenous peoples around our lands, territories, and resources in the name of national interest, in violation of constitutionally enshrined Indigenous rights. If this government is serious about reconciling with Indigenous people, it must ensure the protection of survivors. It was the stories of survivors and our families that put us on a path towards reconciliation.
Yeah, so right. I'm calling on the government. We don't need to listen to this woman anymore. She is introducing a bill to make it illegal to deny the existence of residential schools and their attempt to commit a genocide against the native people. Something that never happened. Something that the Canadian government has spent tens of millions of dollars trying to prove, and they've come up with nothing. There's no evidence that there was ever any mass death at residential schools. But there's still survivors, apparently. You didn't know this. Typically, we use the word graduates, but if you want to make yourself seem like a victim, you are a survivor of school, okay? I, personally, am a high school survivor, all right? I survived public school in Houston, Texas, probably a greater feat than surviving residential schools in Canada. And do we need to remind you of this? Fraser Institute. A year ago, no evidence of mass grave or genocide at residential schools. They spent tens of millions of dollars scanning with ground-penetrating radar every single school that was claimed to have a mass unmarked grave for children that died there. Not a single body was found. Not that, well, they found bodies, but it wasn't that many. Not a single body was ever found by the tens of millions of dollars studies to scan the ground of residential schools. It doesn't exist. It never happened. And now Canada wants to make it illegal for you to say that. By the way, over 120 churches were burned in the follow-up to this lie that the residential schools committed genocide. And now they want to make it illegal to question that, even though it never happened. Just to round off what I was just talking about and the way that our so-called democracy has been completely wrecked and destroyed by the Democrats, to the point that I think extraordinary measures are not just justified, but kind of required to get us back to where we were. Let's go to clip number one here. This is Stephen Miller laying out the treason that the Biden-Harris administration committed against the American people and how this can't be allowed to continue unabated. Let's watch Steve Miller now.
That's it for your audience perfectly, Sean. This was not a loophole. The Biden administration, Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas, devised a scheme to fly illegal aliens into the country and then to escort them en masse across the border by the millions and to give them something known as parole, which gives them a work permit, which gives them a social security number, which gives them access to the voting booth. This was the plan all along, to get them here illegally so they can get free government benefits, get hooked to welfare, and be able to participate in American elections. This was an attack on democracy by the Democrat Party. It's the same attack that we see, Sean, when you have California, a sanctuary state, that is refusing to turn over even illegal alien criminals and gang members to ICE. So these are illegal aliens in California who have been arrested by California police, by California law enforcement for serious crimes, for crimes against children, for felonies, for crimes that threaten public safety. And they are refusing to hand these criminal illegal aliens over to ICE. Instead, they're freeing them back into the cities to offend and offend again. By any definition, what California is doing is criminal. It is a violation of our laws. It is one of the most heinous things that I have seen in my entire.
Yeah, no, it was just literally open treason. They had no right to do any of this. There's no law that said they were allowed to do this. They just did it. And it has to be corrected. This has to be undone. The people that did it have to be imprisoned and possibly given the death penalty for the treason they committed. Congress never voted to open the border. There was no law that said, you know, the extremely stringent requirements for asylum can just be overridden by pressing a button on an app. Extraordinary measures are not just justified, they are necessary at this point to get us back on track. And, you know, Steve Bannon obviously has been going off about this. Alex was going off about this. This is not something that you need to be told. It shouldn't be something that you need to be told. The solutions are so obvious and so apparent. The only question is, why aren't they being done? Why aren't the gloves being taken off? It's not like the things I express up here are like brilliant original ideas most of the time. It's just obvious. It's just obvious what needs to be done. And it's just not being done. And again, I know, you know, it's like when you have Bannon and Jones and Roger Stone and all of them just going, hey guys, rip the gloves off, send the FBI in, you control them now, give them the coordinates of the enemies and say, go fetch, boy. You control them now. You are the master. They are the dog. Send them to do your bidding. And your bidding should be unrepentant, unqualified aggression against the left in every way you can possibly manage. And do it in a way that is just, it doesn't have to be above reproach. You just have to not pay attention to the reproach. It's just, you just need to do it. You just need to do it. And they will whine and they will cry. They are whining. They are crying about things that are perfectly legal and totally justified. They're crying about ICE arresting illegal immigrant criminals and sending them back to their home countries. Something that doesn't harm anybody. Doesn't even harm the person that's being arrested and sent back. They're going home to where they are a citizen and where they've spent their entire lives up to the last 4 years when they scrabbled over the border. It's not even a punishment, really. They're outraged at that. They're calling you a Nazi from that. They're trying to start a civil war over that. So who cares? So who cares what they say? When you have a mayor of a major city like Chicago saying, come arrest me, I dare you, because I'm in support of the criminals and not the law enforcement, then go and arrest them and charge them with something. Hey, it turns out they've got the right judge. They've got a jury that's sympathetic. They get out. Fine. A year or two from now, after spending 6 months in solitary confinement, they can be free, just like the Oath Keepers, just like the January Sixers were allowed to be free. It's exhausting having to say this over and over. I feel like we say it every single day. I feel like everybody who is worth anything in the MAGA right understands this. The administration, it can't possibly be that they don't understand this. It can't possibly be that they think that the way things are going are good, because they're just not. So the only thing we're left to understand, the only conclusion we're able to even come to, is like the Trump administration is deliberately not doing what they need to do. Again, I celebrate when Trump does good things. I love that the border is closed. I love that there actually are deportations going on. But it's just not enough. It's just not enough. Like you're starving to death and you're being fed crumbs and it's like, okay, thank you. I'm still dying though. And it's like, well, you don't appreciate the crumbs. And it's like, I appreciate it. It's just not enough to save us from dying. So no matter what we get, I will not appreciate it until it's enough. Until it's enough for us to survive. Until it's enough for us to rest easy knowing that we're not all about to be thrown into prison the moment that Democrats weasel their way back into power. We've got to attack, 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 attack with everything you've got. Let the chips fall where they may. And I know Alex was talking about it today as well, and I wanted to give some numbers to back this up. Do you want to see a judicial coup? This is from C3 on X at C_3C_3. You want to see a judicial coup? Court blocks and injunctions. These are the number of injunctions that were imposed on presidential administrations in the past. Biden had 14 in 4 years. Clinton had 12 in 8 years. Obama, equal, 12 in 8 years. George W. Bush only had 6 in 8 years. Trump has had 175 plus blocks or injunctions in just the first 4 years of his first administration and the 10 months of this administration. I would be interested to know how many of that was in the 10 months of this administration, because I don't remember this being a big issue last time. Maybe it was, but certainly not to the degree that it is now. The judiciary is filled with leftist activists in robes. Corrupt judges must be addressed. Well, I would change that last word out for a different one. Not addressed as much as I would say impeached or imprisoned or just defrocked in one way or another. Defrocked, if not defenestrated. I'm kidding, but if you have the vocabulary to know what that means, you should know I'm joking. Kind of. A little bit. 175 compared to 6 with George W. Bush. Okay. It's not, is what Trump doing really that offensive? Is he just trying desperately to do a whole bunch of unconstitutional stuff and the judges are heroically stepping into the breach and stopping him? Or is every single one of their injunctions, as far as I can tell, totally fraudulent and almost always get overturned? And almost always, obviously, the outcome of the judge's own activism and personal political predilection. How do you have an executive branch that literally can't get anything done? So the executive branch is being blocked endlessly by this judicial coup, 175 blocks and more versus 6 with George W. Bush, 12 with Obama, 12 with Bill Clinton, 175. So the executive branch can't get anything done because the judiciary steps in and stops them because they are, I'm not trying to overuse the word, I'm trying to express they are literally activists. Not saying that they're lawyers and judges that happen to vote Democrat. I'm saying most of the judges that are issuing nationwide injunctions and blocks have careers where their resume is entirely with leftist NGOs, leftist networks, leftist activism groups. They basically, some of them don't even go to law school. Some of them aren't even lawyers, but work for a couple years with a leftist NGO whose entire purpose of existing is undermining the laws that exist anyway, trying to get people in, trying to, you know, give people, you know, advice so they can stay in the country even if their visa expires. Like, they spend 20 or 30 years doing that, destroying and subverting our law in the private sector. And then Obama taps them on the head, gives them a black robe, and suddenly they're able to stop Trump's agenda in its tracks. This is ridiculous. This is ridiculous. There's no reason why we should be beholden to such an obvious abuse of process, such an obvious abuse of power. Those numbers alone, bring up the numbers again. I really want you to soak this in. More than 10 times the number in the case of Biden. What is 175 divided by 6, right? I mean, you cannot justify this. You cannot say that this is the judiciary behaving in the way that it should. This alone should be enough to tell you the judiciary is in fact filled with leftist activists. Their blocks and injunctions are not justified or predicated on the Constitution. They are fraudulent. So they should not be listened to. 175 injunctions in 4 years and 10 months compared to 12 for Clinton and Obama in their 8 years each. Biden had 14 in 4 years. That was the record. 14 in 4 years compared with 175 in 4 years. Again, not to belabor the point, that alone should be presented by Trump. You should just go, we're not doing injunctions anymore. We're not doing blocks anymore. It was a good thing. It was a nice balance of power to have when it was used appropriately. And in fact, it's their abuse of this exact system that makes them so dangerous. Because honestly, who wouldn't be okay with just going, all right, Trump should just not listen to judges anymore. He just shouldn't listen to them. And that, you want to talk about a dangerous precedent, that's a dangerous precedent. That's setting up our entire system for destruction, but we're forced to do it because they're improperly abusing their power. It has to stop. Same as asylum. Is asylum a good thing? Yeah, I think it kind of is. But it has to end now. It has to be over because it was abused, because there were particular prerequisites that had to be fulfilled, and they decided that those just didn't matter anymore. Which means the law isn't what the law was when it was passed, meaning it's not valid anymore, meaning it can't, this can't go on. This can't exist like this. 175 blocks and injunctions in just 4 years of Trump's administration. That's a judicial coup. That is weaponizing the process of our government, not to uphold the values of our divided federal government, but rather to weaponize, to abuse, and to ultimately destroy it. So, you know, Alex was talking about the different, you know, laws actually and prerequisites or predecessors, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, doing more or less this, going, hey, these judges that are my enemies aren't letting me get anything passed. The people voted for me. I'm not going to let a bunch of judges stand in the way of what the people voted for. I'm firing all the judges. Okay, Trump just needs to do that. Something like that, like literally anything like this. The one thing we cannot do is continue to abide by laws that are set by our enemies, to continue to obey rules that are ignored by our enemies. This is suicidal. Arrest the mayors, arrest the governors, send the military in to do sweeps of illegal immigrants, and just get them out. And just get them out. Into the H-1B visa program. That's another one. Incredibly simple. Just end it. Just end it. Problem solved. This is one of those things. I can show you video after video after video building the argument of why H-1B visas shouldn't be allowed, are abused by every company that's permitted to involve themselves in them. And so many people have done, you know, research on this, and it really is like, basically every major company, they have these ways of getting around the system. They have these ways of technically fulfilling the requirements of the law while absolutely violating the spirit of it. And they do this without punishment, without anything. It has to end. Just end it. Just end it. What's the worst that could happen? Americans get hired. Some American companies don't do quite as well as they would otherwise. Who cares? End the H-1B visa program today. Did you know what happens when the H-1B visa program ends? Nobody affected negatively by it is a voter. I mean, maybe the people that own the companies, but whatever. That's one vote for all of Amazon. Like, it doesn't matter. But it's not like you're going to be deporting a bunch of people that'd be voting right wing. They're immigrants. They shouldn't be allowed to vote anyway. So you expel all of them. Suddenly, house prices go down. Suddenly, wages go up. Suddenly, people are seeing their government delivered to them. Suddenly, some of these existential problems that we're facing will evaporate. They're being caused almost deliberately by the H-1B visa program. Totally unnecessary. Totally fraudulent. If you want to set up a golden ticket system where it's like, okay, 100 people a year who are the best of the best in their, various industries all over the world. Okay, fine. Fine. We'll take 10 Indians. We'll take 3 Chinese people. We'll take 2 Africans. It's just like the best 2 Africans in Africa. They get to come over. Like, okay. But no, these companies are weaponizing this system to systematically replace all of their American workers with globally sourced scab workers, and it's destroying people's lives. End it. Just end the program. This is one of those things. So it's like, do we have to debate this? What is even the argument? It's bad for American workers. It's bad for wages. It's bad for just immigration in general. We're not a cohesive country anymore. Like, it just needs to end. Same thing with like these Muslim cities that are being built, or there's some Hindu compound that's being built where they're going to have a statue that's taller than the Statue of Liberty. And it's like 100,000 people in this neighborhood. This is going to be entirely Indians, Hindus. Like, we don't need to allow this. There's absolutely nothing requiring us to allow a bunch of foreigners to come create a colony in our country. What? Why would we ever allow? Why do we allow this? It really, I mean, there are so many things where it's just like, the government should just say, that's not allowed. Sorry. Whatever law needs to be written just to disallow this, that's what needs to happen. H-1B visas need to be eliminated. Basically, all legal immigration needs to be massively curtailed. Illegal immigration needs to be eradicated. The soldiers need to come back home from Germany or wherever the hell else they're posted, not serving America's interests. They need to be deployed on American streets to deal with the literal invasion that we've been subjected to. Is any of this difficult to apprehend? Is any of this complicated, nuanced political machinations? Or do we just need to do what's right for our country and deal with whatever consequences happen as a result? Because in one way, we actually survive as a country by not doing that, we're done. We're just done. And again, you know, it's just exhausting going through the same thing over and over and over again. And I'm trying not to be, you know, spoiled or whatever. Like, you know, I want to appreciate what's being revealed. But we know who the criminals are. We know the crimes they committed. We've known since 2016 everything we could possibly need to know about Russiagate collusion, about James Comey, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page. What are we doing? What are we doing here? More articles. Jack Smith seized Trump's personal government-issued phone, subpoenaed his personal records during Arctic Frost investigation. Gee, maybe he should be in jail. Comey boomerang, ex-director confronted with personal emails, notes after playing victim card. We now have email evidence showing that what we've known the whole time, that he was leaking information, that he lied under oath. Comey expected to work for President-elect Clinton. New top aide was talking to the media, again, according to emails. Just like we've laid out for the last 5 years, since I started doing American Journal, I keep telling people the reason they didn't cover up what they were doing was because they thought Clinton was going to be in office. They thought if it's actually interesting because they made the wrong calculus. They thought if we just do this stuff, then we'll win the election, Clinton will be in office, and then it won't matter that we broke the law to get to that outcome because she'll be in office, she'll cover up for us, the crimes will never come out, and we'll have succeeded. So that was a gamble. They risked a lot on the bet that Hillary Clinton would win. They lost that bet. It's time for that payment to come due. They committed crimes. They need to be sent to jail for this. They committed crimes in a way that was easily noticeable, easily trackable, like we know it all, because they were so confident. So we need to make, you know, we need to do the opposite. What we do, first of all, won't be illegal, won't be leaking things to the media that are from a, you know, the opposition campaign or to get justification for the FISA warrants to spy on the people to try to find out the blackmail, you know, that we're going to use. Like, we don't need to do any of that. We don't need to do any of that. We need to end the filibuster. We need to totally revamp the voting system to be paper ballots and reliable and to remove the machines. We need to deport people at a massive rate. We need to do all of these things in the understanding that if we don't do it enough, if we don't succeed in this mission, the blowback will be hell because the Democrats will get back into power and literally start pogroms. So, can we do it? Can we just do that already? Can we just make that effort, take that effort and just do it? It's not illegal. It's not unconstitutional. It's not authoritarian. It's what is necessary and demanded. Yeah, it's just confirmation of what we've told you the whole time. So, here we are in the year 2025, learning what we somehow knew in 2017. I'm trying to be excited about it. I mean, I'm trying to be, wow, Arctic Frost, it's all getting blown up, but it's like, you know, we know. No, we know. And we're aware. They've done all of this out in the open. All of their crimes are on the record. Just do something about it. Do something about it. Arrest these people. And it can be a snowball kind of operation. Once you arrest one of them, you put him in the hot seat. You say, you're going to jail for the rest of your life, John Brennan, unless you want to help us get the other people you were involved with. Unless you want to help us sort of shortcut through this investigation, take us to the kingpins, tell us who did what, or you're going to jail for the rest of your life. Do to them what they did to the Oath Keepers. We're talking about Comey, Jack Smith, Arctic Frost. We'll go to some videos here that explain at least some of it. But this story from Just the News. In fact, we'll go to, I think I have a video of John Solomon sort of laying some of this out. We'll go to him and then we'll read into the details. Clip number 17. Here's John Solomon talking about the explosive documents, the bombshell revelations that Comey did, in fact, leak to the media through some of his, you know, assistants And this was discovered on an email server that was apparently, I don't even understand where they got these. I'll read. They found them in burn bags inside a secret safe inside the FBI headquarters. Just the weirdest story you've ever heard. Let's go to clip 17 now. This is John Solomon of Just the News breaking some of this down.
All right, let's get down to some big bombshell news that just moved a couple of minutes ago over at justthenews.com. We've been following the story of James Comey. He's indicted for lying to Congress, saying he never authorized any of his staff to leak to the media. And late last week, as we told you, he played the victim card. I'm being maliciously prosecuted because Donald Trump hates me. Well, today, the Kash Patel FBI and the lead attorney prosecuting his case, Lindsay Halligan, well, they responded, and they responded with a lot of evidence. What did they respond with? James Comey's own emails and his own handwritten notes. And what do they show? They show that James Comey was clearly aware that his top aide was providing information anonymously to the news media. Not only was he aware of it, he wrote in a private email, "Good job, my friend," actually congratulating him when Dan Richman, one of his top lieutenants, told him what he had just done with the New York Times. Yes, just like the indictment said, the story is about Hillary Clinton's email, so it backs up the government's case that Comey was authorizing leaks to through his staff to reporters concerning a Hillary Clinton case, just like they argued. But they went a little bit further. It turns out that when Kash Patel found those burn bags in that secret room where a whole bunch of FBI evidence was sitting, they found something special, some handwritten notes by James Comey. What do those handwritten notes show? He appeared to be aware in September 2016 that of the U.S. intelligence intercept that Hillary Clinton had approved a plan to hang a fake Russian shingle on Donald Trump's house, campaign house. Now, that's important because the handwritten notes don't match with James Comey's testimony. James Comey told Congress, that doesn't sound familiar. I don't think I ever knew about that. He wrote about it in his handwritten notes. And finally, one will ask, well, why would James Comey do this? What was the motive? Today's emails that were just released in the court filing give us one other answer. He wrote to Dan Richman, his lieutenant, that he fully expected soon to be working for President-elect Hillary Clinton. That's right from the emails. So he was waiting to work for Hillary Clinton, and he thought that Hillary Clinton would be grateful for the way he did things in handling her email case. Uh-oh. That wasn't what the victim card I think James Comey was planning to play. But all of that emails, all of those letters, all those court filings, even the handwritten notes, we just posted them at justthenews.com. You can go check them out today. We'll have more of that breaking news all throughout the night.
That's John Solomon of Just the News, the article at justthenews.com. James Comey played the victim card in fighting his indictment on charges of misleading Congress, but that strategy boomeranged when prosecutors in his old agency released an avalanche of new evidence showing that the ex-FBI director hoped to please Hillary Clinton, cheered on media leaks he claimed he did not sanction, and wrote emails and notes that directly conflict with his past congressional testimony. Part of the unflattering portrait of Comey, prosecutors revealed Monday, came from long-hidden files of the new FBI director, Kash Patel, found in burn bags and secret storage rooms of the Bureau's headquarters. The evidence included proof that Comey used a private email account to conduct FBI matters, including media strategy with a top lieutenant, at the same time his agency probed Clinton for improperly using her own private email for government business. Saying things like, "Perhaps you can make him smarter," Comey wrote in one email to FBI special government employee Daniel Richman, in which the two discussed trying to influence New York Times reporter about his coverage of the Clinton email scandal. And basically what happened was, yeah, this guy Richman, that was just, it almost seems like it was his mouthpiece in the media. And Richman is going, New York Times wants me to write an article sort of explaining your position. Do you want me to do that? And James Comey says, no, I think it's okay. Hillary Clinton will understand. And, you know, once we work for her, you know, we'll be rewarded for what we did for her. But then, like, the coverage wasn't as friendly as he wanted, so he went back to him and said, yeah, maybe you can make him smarter. Maybe you should actually write that article and say what I want you to. Just literally directing this guy to write articles and what to say in it and what to leak. Just an abject violation of his sworn oath testimony in front of Congress. The cache of documents also includes a September 2016 handwritten note in which Comey appears to address U.S. intelligence intercepts about Clinton planning to manufacture a Russian scandal against Trump, something he told senators he didn't recall knowing. He had no idea. It's all a big accident. Again, I don't know. It just feels wrong to even, like, give credence to any of this. It's not complicated. James Comey, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, James Clapper, Mudd. Remember that guy, Mudd? Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, Andrew McCabe. These people conspired to rig an election. They conspired to spy on a candidate to prevent him from being elected. They covered it up by launching another investigation, the Crossfire Hurricane investigation, try to stop him from uncovering all of the malfeasance they did. We know this. We've known this. We can go through the details, but it's like, how much more do we need? We now have handwritten notes from James Comey. Talk about being caught red-handed. In his own hand, we have evidence that contradicts what he said in Congress. At the very least, that is a rock-solid, bombshell, knock-out-of-the-park home run case for lying to Congress, but that's not the real crime. That was a crime in pursuit of covering up the real crimes. The real crimes were trying to rig the election, were coordinating with Hillary Clinton on the presumption that she would soon be in office. He tried to do illegal things to benefit her, thinking he would be repaid by his boss once she was elected. What are we doing? What are we doing? The same guy who's posting death threats to President Trump a month ago. What are we doing? And he's not even arrested. He's not even hauled into jail. Nobody raids his home. He's allowed to quietly sneak in the back door of his court appearance and then sneak out again before anybody gets a view on him. He should be in a yellow jumpsuit walking in circles in a courtyard for an hour a day while the rest of the day is spent in a single freezing cold room lit by a single fluorescent light bulb, like all of the other innocent people who were thrown in prison because they're terrorists for wandering through the Capitol. Why is he being treated with less severity than they are? Why is James Comey being treated better than the father of seven who was arrested for praying outside of an abortion clinic? Why are we not 6 months into a trial at this point? And the answer is because Trump is once again surrounded by traitors. Yeah, I'm not trying just to, you know, not be appreciative of what's coming out, but it's like, okay, who cares? Who cares about more evidence, more information, more evidence of the thing that we've known they're guilty of for 10 years? Jesus. Someday they'll figure it out. And this is a quote from his handwritten note. Quote, someday they will figure it out. And as parentheses, individual one and individual two point out, my decision will be one a president-elect Clinton will be very grateful for. Although that's not why I did it. Well, that's not why I did it, but President-elect Clinton will be very grateful for this decision I made. That is an admission of guilt. Okay? That's what that is. 100% that's what that is. As much as if he was being paid in cash for it, right? He did this in the expectation that he would be rewarded by his criminal partner, Hillary Clinton. In the same way that if he said, you know, they'll figure it out, but, you know, President Clinton will wire $1 million to my account. He was expecting a reward for breaking the law. And shows what a miracle that Trump's election in 2016 truly was. And honestly goes on and on. So this was all in response. Basically, Comey tried to get the whole case dismissed. He wanted the whole case dismissed with prejudice by saying this was a vindictive prosecution. The prosecution came back and said, for one thing, you haven't shown us any evidence that this is vindictive prosecution. You haven't shown us any cases of any other people who are in a similar situation to you that weren't prosecuted. That would indicate, you know, that you were being singled out, which, of course, all of these things apply to Donald Trump. So this is why it's just exhausting to talk about. Is it's like it's not even a question of whether what was done to Trump was deliberate, malicious prosecution. It just absolutely was. When you had the court case in Georgia and the case in New York and the other case in New York and the Jack Smith investigations and it's like none of that was justified. None of every single one of those things actually. I mean, it's again, it's just insane. Like it's like too much to even. Do we even explain? It's too much. So they say, like, Comey's argument is, quote, The government has singled out Mr. Comey for prosecution because of his protected speech and because President Trump's personal animus towards Mr. Comey. Comey's lawyers told the judge this in a court filing last month. Such a vindictive and selective prosecution violates the First Amendment, due process clause, and equal protection principles. The proper remedy for this unconstitutional prosecution is dismissal with prejudice. Any lesser remedy would be insufficient in light of the government's flagrant misconduct and need to deter the government from bringing further unconstitutional prosecutions. So they respond back. This prosecution is not vindictive. The defendant has not produced direct evidence of a vindictive motive. Now, think about this. Just take one example from one of the many trials that they subjected Trump to. Just take Letitia James. We can show you video after video after video after video of Letitia James admitting that she would selectively prosecute Donald Trump. On the campaign trail, saying, elect me and I'll go after Donald Trump. Saying, I will do nothing but go after Donald Trump. Literally. I mean, she didn't say, like, Trump's a criminal and therefore needs to be held to account. She said, elect me, I'll go into the office in the morning, I'll sue Donald Trump, I'll go home. That's what I'll do all day, every day. Okay, so if you're talking about malicious prosecution, we've already fulfilled the first requirement, knowledge of, evidence of a vindictive motive. Because they announced it, they advertised that they had a vindictive motive. They continue, he has not shown that the prosecutor pursued this case solely to punish him for exercising his First Amendment rights. Again, I would say that take any of Trump's lawsuits, but particularly sticking with the Letitia James one, she admitted it. She said it. She advertised that this was to punish Trump. So he's not carried the heavy burden of establishing vindictive prosecution. The prosecution is also not selective. The defendant has not identified similarly situated individuals who were not prosecuted. Something that would be not just so easy to find in the case of all of Trump's cases. Again, sticking with Letitia James. Nobody has ever been prosecuted for what Trump was prosecuted then. What he was prosecuted for was nothing, was literally nothing. No, it was actually nothing. It was a loan that he paid back. She went back to find this old loan that the bank didn't have a problem with, that the bank did due diligence on, and said when he was making this agreement with the bank, he overestimated the cost of Mar-a-Lago, which isn't even true in the first place. It's like the pricing was accurate. The price sheet that they gave them let them know, had an amendment saying, by the way, it's up to you to verify this information, that we think this is what it's worth, but it's up to you to do your due diligence. And if you think it's otherwise, then let us know. Bank didn't do that. Bank didn't have a problem with the collateral. The loan was paid off. And then in comes Letitia James 20 years later, getting elected by saying, I'm going to go after Trump, and then finding this one example of something that she can twist. It's so far beyond anything recognizable in the judicial corpus. Like, it's crazy. So again, this is why it's exhausting to have to go through this over and over. It's because, like, everything they say is a projection. Everything they claim Trump is doing, they've already done over and over and over again. For some reason, it's, you know, James Comey's able to make these arguments, and hell, the judge may even decide on James Comey's behalf. I mean, hell, even though we have it in his own handwriting, admitting to what he's doing, admitting to things that he later claimed under oath he didn't do, they might still say, yeah, but Trump did an interview one time where he said he didn't like Comey. Therefore, Comey can never be prosecuted for anything ever. Who knows? That may be how it works out. Because if the law actually meant anything, if we are actually a constitutional republic under the rule of law, Letitia James would already be in prison, the case would have never made it, and James Comey would long ago be rotting behind bars. But instead, he's going to try to play these games, and we're just going to present overwhelming evidence, and hopefully that matters at a certain point. Hopefully something actually happens eventually. Not exactly holding my breath. Jack Smith seized Trump's government-issued phone, subpoenaed his personal records during Arctic Frost investigation. Again, we're learning more and more about Arctic Frost. First, it was 20 senators and congressmen are being surveilled. Then it was a couple hundred. And then actually, it also involved journalists and Alex Jones and, you know, lawyers that had something to do with something tangentially related to January 6th. And it's just like, okay, do we need the details, or can we just say as a blanket statement, the Democrats with Jack Smith at the head, but Alejandro Mayorkas was in on this, Merrick Garland was in on this, Joe Biden was in on this, probably Kamala Harris was in on this, and they all just conspired to work together to mass surveil everybody on the right wing in an effort to destroy them. Like, can we just say that and accept that and then act like that's the case? Because that is the case. Okay. This should be just the easiest stuff. This should just be knock it out of a park. Simplicity itself. And it's you know, whatever. I feel bad just like repeating myself over and over. I know people get bored, but it's like, y'all, Biden actually did this to us. This already happened to the right wing. The right wing, every lawyer Trump ever had has been arrested. They arrest everybody from Jenna Ellis to Rudy Giuliani to Sidney What's-Her-Name to Owen Schroyer and Roger Stone. Like, they already did this. What are we doing? What are we doing here? It's so disequal. It's so beyond unequal. They actually committed these crimes. They actually committed treason. They've actually taken our entire country to the brink of total destruction by opening the border and rigging the election in the way that they did. They already did it. And they were persecuting Trump and anybody who supported him when we didn't even do anything. These people have committed treason. They have committed these crimes, and we can't treat them the same. What the hell? Let's go to clip 21 here. Apparently, Biden had a list of like 700 enemies on the right wing, with 12 in particular, with asterisks next to it, saying these are supposed to be neutralized. That word neutralized coming up again. Gee, I wonder what that means. Let's go to clip 21. This is from Lindell TV.
Now, I'm breaking news over the weekend, and this just came in. The absolute truth has learned of a document that was created during the Biden regime in preparation for a consecutive second term for Joe Biden, which ultimately would have been Kamala Harris, right, if they'd had their way, that included 700 names of Americans that they planned to target, with 12 with stars by them that they specifically wanted neutralize, to use a buzzword of late. Now, these 700 Americans were going to be targeted for pushing out of the country, for silencing, whatever means necessary. This is a developing story, and I will have more on this week. But of course, it comes on the heels of more revelations from Congress on the Arctic Frost investigation that targeted the likes of Mike Lindell, Rudy Giuliani, Kurt Olson, Alex Jones, and many of the people that you see right here on this show. And for more on that, let's bring in our White House correspondent, Kara Castronova, that's standing by on the North Lawn of the White House. Kara, this information was given to me because I was told that my name is on this list, which is no surprise to me. I haven't really detailed what I went through in the 4 years of the Biden regime, this kind of surveillance that I experienced. You and I have talked about it a little bit because you were one of the brave reporters who really stuck up for the J6ers. You would go and report honestly on their cases and what happened that day and much more, the weaponization you reported on by the Biden regime. And you, too, had similar experiences in the way of surveillance. It's more receipts, but it's not shocking. And in fact, we're going to learn more even about Arctic Frost this week, it sounds like, as well. Correct, Kara?
It's true. A lot more information is coming out about Arctic Frost and all of the surveillance on regular Americans. Since the beginning, when Arctic Frost came out and I saw Mike Lindell's name on there, Rudy Giuliani and others, I knew that there was more to it, that there would be more people on that list. A lot of regular Americans, journalists like you, Emerald, or other similar lists. I was always suspicious. I was on one myself because very suddenly after January 6th, my internet presence virtually disappeared. I was canceled on certain apps that I couldn't use on the cell phone. The FBI visited my house 2 times. So a number of things happened to me to point that out to the fact that I was on a list. And I did consult with certain attorneys that said the only way that my websites would be taken down in this manner and my Shopify accounts and being canceled on social media that was that I was certainly on a government watch list and that I should FOIA or ask for a Privacy Act request about myself, which I did during the Biden administration. And I was rejected because of ongoing investigations or they just simply didn't answer my request, which, as you know, is illegal. So now my curiosity is definitely up there. Well, I will probably file another FOIA or a Privacy Act on myself and others like you, Emerald, that have been targeted by this surveillance by the Biden administration.
I agree. I think it's time to do so again. I'm not sure that we'll get our answers. We perhaps might still be stonewalled based on some of the cases like the Seth Rich laptop. We've seen Ty Clevenger, the attorney in that case, still having to kind of fight against FBI stonewalling. And I want to hone in on what you just said, because you revealed that the FBI showed up to your house 2 different times during the Biden years. What were they looking for, Kara?
So that was Mike Lindell. The Absolute Truth was the show. Now, I haven't been able to find any more about, I guess the crew has, Biden admin enemy list targeted hundreds of Republicans. So I suppose that's what they're talking about. I haven't been able to find any more about specifically the 700 people and the 12 people, you know, slated for neutralization. Obviously, she mentioned Alex Jones there, and she said there's some overlap with Arctic Frost, but I haven't been able to find any more information about this other than what we just saw. Maybe if the crew can find something, or you know, people can call in and let us know what's going on here. But obviously, Arctic Frost was a lot more sweeping and all-inclusive than we previously expected. It includes hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of right-wing activists, as well as elected officials. From Gateway Pundit, Jack Smith seized Trump's government-issued phone. Arctic Frost was a taxpayer-funded Biden DOJ witch hunt launched in April 2022 that seized government-issued cell phones belonging to Trump and Pence while conducting a barrage of interviews across the country. In 2020, Trump alternate electors prompted the Biden DOJ to open the Arctic Frost investigation into Trump and hundreds of other individuals and organization. Oh, yeah, this is an important part. Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley recently revealed that a former special counsel, Jack Smith, targeted the entire Republican apparatus because of whistleblowers, by the way, because of whistleblowers. This didn't come out of this didn't come from Cash Patel. This didn't come from anybody in the Trump administration. This came from a whistleblower inside the organizations exposing this to Chuck Grassley. So I don't even know if you can. Yeah, this is the only article I found on it, and it doesn't have any information. It just repeats what we saw there. So I don't know where that number is coming from, or where the neutralization quote is coming from. But Chuck Grassley says, I've obtained through legally protected whistleblower disclosures during a press conference on Wednesday, 197 subpoenas were issued by Jack Smith and his team. These subpoenas were issued to 34 individuals and 163 businesses, including financial institutions. And Trump called out the dirty dealings that were behind this. This was a whistleblower. This wasn't even, you know, a Trump appointee finding this out. This wasn't a Trump investigation that led to the revelation of Arctic Frost. This was like, so at this point, I guess the future of our nation relies on incompetence in the FBI, not burning the bags of evidence that they thought they were supposed to burn. Instead, we're going Easter egg hunting in the headquarters of the FBI, looking for, you know, evidence of their crimes and finding it, apparently. And then whistleblowers inside the organization exposing this to senators. Is this what we're relying on to get our country back on track? Accidents and coincidences? It's absurd. We'll be right back.
I got it from high-level White House sources, and I confirmed with others that were there, that they said, we don't want accomplices. This wasn't Trump. I mean, people at the White House heard this when they were having DOJ meetings. We're going with the lone gunman. We're not really going after the accomplices, because Trump had said, I want the Trantifa. I want the 6 trannies that said Charlie be dead tomorrow. I want them SWAT teamed. I want them arrested. And the word went out, no, we're not doing what the big guy wants as usual. We're going with this story and that. And then 2 days after I came out with that, Cash Patel comes out and says, oh, no, we're looking at all the angles, and we're looking at multiple shooters. And Dan Bongino, I sent you guys the clip. I didn't see it on my list. It's like a 15-minute clip. Pull that up for me. I'll send it again if you don't have it. I shouldn't see it on my list. Or just go to X and type in, Bongino says they're looking at the crowd helping the shooter. Well, you say you want a conspiracy. Yeah. They're like, yay, yay, cheering. They're not scared when it happens. Two people say they killed him and said we did it as a diversion for the shooter. Yeah, there's your conspiracy right there. And it's crickets on that. Absolute, total, and complete crickets. So, yeah. It doesn't look like a cover-up. It is a cover-up. A cover-up of what? I'm not exactly sure. And maybe it was Netanyahu. If we find out, we'll report it. And I predict, as I said 6 months ago, within 6 months, if Pam Bondi and Cash Patel don't have major indictments on the table, done, launched, delivered, they'll be removed. And as soon as the indictments start, not as political persecution, but as justice, they will collapse. And Trump knows that. And thank God he came out against Pam Bondi over the weekend with that letter saying, what the hell is your problem? We have all the proof of everything they've done. And you won't do anything. Good. Remove her. And remove Cash Patel. Remove them and put people in. The American people stand with you. But that's why the globalists are so scared. Because we're in a different ballgame now than 8 years ago, and they know that Trump is learning fast. Clearly, Pam Bondi's compromised. Clearly, that's what I've been told. Clearly, Cash Patel is. Bongino just wants out. They're using him as a placeholder. I don't think he's bad, from my sources. He just wants out. Trump, for an embarrassment, doesn't want him to leave. They've got the Missouri AG ready to come in, who we believe is a good person.
I've got to get 10 different assumptions to make this gunshot work. And maybe, right, Alex, in the universe of worlds, maybe the jackpot Powerball got hit and all of those things happened. And that's what led to this 30-06 round net passing through his neck. If you want to believe that, and I know some people do, that's fine. But I'm sorry. It's not.
I don't know anybody who wants to believe this now, but the FBI. But I was told 2 days before Patel came out and said, we're looking at everything, all the angles, helpers, hand signs. I was told from inside the White House, no. They're going with lone gunmen. They're not even looking at the Tranifa saying he'll be dead tomorrow. So I was told by very credible people there's a cover-up. And I don't say that with pleasure. Well, let me tell you this piece of intel. I got a call Thursday, and I didn't sit on it. I just was mulling it until Saturday, and then I made some other calls to another well-known individual, and they said the same thing. They were told, no, they're going with lone gunmen, and they're shutting down everything, and not even looking into the Tranifa that said he'd be dead the next day. So they're not even going after them because they want this story. Why would you do that if you weren't covering up?
Yeah, I don't understand who's tying up Cash Patel. Who has him so compromised?
Well, I'm not here to apologize for Cash Patel. And a lot of my good FBI sources really think he's bad news, like Kyle Serafin. But the consensus is, let's say there's more of a consensus that Pam Bondi is political and cowardly and lazy. Those are the terms I've been given for her. And Trump had to basically threaten to fire her last week, not to get what he wanted. The grand jury had already indicted Comey in Virginia. But, yeah, I mean, look, we're going to find out very quickly.
All right, folks, third hour is on the War Room. You can find and share that video on Twitter, on X, at Real Alex Jones. I'm joined in studio by the one and only Rex Jones. We're going to pick it up where we left it off on the other side and start talking about what we can do to save this country once and for all. Stay with us, folks. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room, Infowars.com, band.video. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Joining me in studio, the one and only Rex Jones. You can follow him on X at Rex Jones News with a Z.
And you should. Thank you for having me back on, Harrison. It's always a pleasure.
The pleasure is all mine. There it is, Rex Jones News with a Z. And of course, he does a show.
Oh, unfollow.
Wait a second.
Wait a second.
Make sure you click that follow button one time only. He does a show called Gray Area Talks with his co-host, Tim. Very, very interesting stuff. We got a lot we're talking about today.
When I came in, Harrison had some things he wanted me to look at, so I put my little stacks on the table, and then I look over at him and all these glorious stacks that he has, and I just...
It's a mess.
Can't compete with that, man.
It's just a mess. But here's what I think is driving a lot of the headlines today. It's stories like this, okay? Quote, "I'm angry with my president. Trump voters in Florida confront the fallout of his policies a year before midterms. A year after Donald Trump's election, they gave him the key to the White House a second time. Many Latino Trump voters in Florida, who sealed the state's status as a Republican stronghold, are now questioning their decision. Trump's manifesto of economic prosperity and law and order clashes with the reality that continues to punish disadvantaged families." So, you know, I think they're getting some polls in. I think they're getting some, you know, surveys done that show that Trump is not so popular with his base these days, and it seems like he's doing a lot to try to reclaim some of that. He's making these angry statements about, we got to get rid of the filibuster, we're going to lose the midterms because Republicans aren't doing enough. I mean, what's your take on this, Rex?
You know, it's very interesting to me as a young person that supported Donald Trump in 2020, but mostly in 2024 when I voted for him the second time. I voted for him to end the wars. That was my basis for justifying going and standing at 8 a.m. or whatever it was at the polling station, actually doing the whole song and dance and ritual for Trump. But looking at the situation as it is now with what's been going on with the SNAP and the EBT and the government shutdown, I think a lot of the low propensity, like people that don't vote a lot, minority voters specifically that are upset about policies like that, I think that this is not what they expected. Mm. So on a domestic level, I think it's that. I think there are also a lot of independents like myself that are more focused on the foreign policy and what we were told, what we were promised versus what we've been given currently. I mean, look, I've heard my dad kind of, you know, I've heard my dad say certain things about Marco Rubio, but I know my dad's also called Marco Rubio a political mercenary. Mm. And I think that's the purest description for him. I really like the signaling that we see from J.D. Vance, even though I'm not sure on him totally as a candidate. But I mean, I didn't vote for Marco Rubio to be, you know, the general of the United States military
right
at the end of the day. And like, that's something that I'm upset about specifically in South America. I think the number of people that we've killed is up to 61 in those boats. And you can go, yeah, they're drug dealers. They're bringing the fentanyl. I mean, here's the thing. It's a little boat. It's only really big enough to go from Venezuela to Nicaragua, not to the United States. And you could say, oh, it's transporting drugs there. That's why we got to do it. But I mean, like, we are just killing people. And this is always one of the big criticisms with Obama, right? You can go to a libtard and they go, Obama's great. He's the greatest person ever. You go, well, he killed American citizens.
Yeah, with drones.
You know, with drones, he struck weddings, he struck hospitals. And, you know, when we have such a mandate to lead with the Republican Party, we have such an overwhelming election where Trump wins the popular vote, now we're kind of entering into a time where I fear that we're giving the Democrats the ground that they needed, right? Yeah. And I mean, like, not sure how much you want to get into this, but the Mamdani situation. I've seen a lot of people, you know, it's like, you know, Cuomo's not as bad. Cuomo's not as bad. I mean, he killed grandma. He sent people into nursing homes that had COVID, refused to get them treatment when Trump offered it. He sent the big hospital ship there. So Cuomo, to me, like, you can't ever support that guy. You got to step away because he had power. Look what he did with it. And Mamdani, I mean, I watch a lot of left-wing shows just to get, like, information and another view. And I've been watching Due Dissonance a lot, and they really like Mamdani, and they criticize a lot of the attacks on him, which I think are warranted. But at the same time, when they criticize or when they fawn over Mamdani a little bit, or however you say it, Mamdani, when they fawn over him, I'm just like, look, you see this guy's Chuck E. Cheese smile? Mm-hmm. Like, he's the fakest of the fake.
Yeah.
And, you know, a Muslim that doesn't cover his wife, a Muslim that, like, you know, he declares himself to be a Muslim, but he does all sorts of things that are quote unquote haram, you know, not allowed to hang out with drag queens or go into, you know, the head shop and do all sorts of things like this. But this is how he represents himself. And it really is that amorphous blob coalition that they always wanted with Obama. And they're getting it with Mamdani. But there's one issue where Mamdani is correct, and it's the war issue. Like, he's anti what's gone on in Israel against the Palestinians. And I think you go to a place that's liberal leaning, but also has independence like New York. That's how you get young people to vote, is, hey, just stop people from dying.
I don't think I'm alone in that. The first time I ever heard of or saw Mamdani was that viral clip of the mayoral debate in New York City where they say, where will you visit as your first international trip? And every one of them says Israel, except for Mamdani, which that wouldn't even be that bad. But then they all start grilling Mamdani and going, well, why didn't you say Israel?
I go to Israel. I've been to Israel six times.
So that was his first breakout moment. That's when he got his big boost. And from then on, it's just been up and up for Mamdani. Right. So this is what I actually tweeted this out, I think, yesterday, where it's like, if you are so scared of socialist or Islamist taking over in this country, then you need to focus on the problems America is facing, because the socialists are saying we have the solution to your economic problems, and the Islamists are saying we're not going to give a blank check to Israel. And these are things that motivate voters, especially young ones.
And the problem is, as the right, I'll just say, but really, you know, as constitutionalists, as Republicans, really not in the sense of being a Republican as a member of that party, but as in, like, we both support the Republic, right? Yes. It's like Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I actually spent like the whole first hour talking about that exact idea. Yeah.
Right. So, like, we support the Republic as true Americans, right? And when you have one party that's outwardly bad, outwardly evil, but attracts kind of like these weak people and builds that giant coalition, then you have the other party that represents good values, but doesn't support or back any of them. You know, I think the second one is worse. I think the Republicans might be worse, because at least the Democrats don't really lie about what they're about. I mean, my dad, you, Brian Morello play clips all day of them saying, hey, this is what we're going to do. Right. But the Republicans, they go like, we're for peace and truth and liberty. And then Lindsey comes on the stage and goes, we ran out of bombs. I love President Trump.
We're killing all the right people.
And we're cutting your taxes. That's what he said. We're killing all the right people and cutting your taxes.
Ooh, give me the shivers. Yeah, no, it's infuriating.
Can't we represent being, like, decent, you know, in our political, like, machinations?
Or just being strong in our beliefs and just going, look, this is just the way it is. Like, you can be offended, but, like, we're just standing on principle here. We're standing on business.
Right.
And you can whine and scream all you want. We're doing what we have to. And we cannot get that from them. And this is interesting, because this is sort of different than what you said, but I thought this was a very appropriate response to sort of the idea that the GOP is losing the youth. So Mark Mitchell, friend of the show from Rasmussen Reports, says, you don't get it, GOP. Only 35% of 18 to 29-year-olds approve of Trump's performance. That's, like, incredibly low. They are also far more likely to want Biden aides prosecuted for the auto pen scandal. So it's
and he should be. It's insane.
So it's not that Republican youth is, like, not conservative. They're dissatisfied that Trump isn't doing more. They're dissatisfied that what we must be done isn't being done. And so this is from Aesthetica, account on X at ANC_aesthetics. And he says this: I'll say it a million times until people get it. Trump's approval is going down because his focus has been too much on foreign policy and his DOJ hasn't figured out what time it is. We know what happens if Democrats get back into power. We know what happens if criminal Democrats are not held accountable. Young people are getting impatient. We want justice. They don't give a crap about foreign entanglements aside from not wanting to be in them. They care about domestic issues, immigration, rooting out Democrat corruption, cost of living, buying a house, getting a job. These should be the primary focuses of an administration if they want a chance in the midterms. And we haven't seen much of any of that. In fact, the only really positive move we've seen in that is the stock market, which is completely disassociated.
Right. The numbers on the screen are going up. That means you're doing better, right? And I mean,
totally
look,
ridiculous.
Your government, your United States government, if you're an American citizen listening to this right now, your government gave over $300 billion to an Eastern European former Soviet bloc country called Ukraine, where a comedian turned TV actor turned president, like House of Cards Kevin Spacey, exists and rules as a dictator and throws men in vans and takes them to the front lines. It's so sick. And then they sell you this as if it's some sort of Star Wars story, because everything is a TV show. Everything is media. And, you know, Alex talks about this a lot. He goes, like, people think that the TV is real. They think that that's real life, the real world. People watch these shows on Disney Plus about good versus evil, and they get fed that narrative from the media. And they go, yeah, it's good. And then you can't eat, you can't drive, you can't live, you can't work. And when it comes down to all that, I just want the American public to wake up. And we've been saying this for 30 years. But we just want people to wake up and realize, you know, we have the right as voters, as citizens of this republic. And that's a very old idea. It goes back to the BC, goes back to the Roman Republic. We have the right, guys, to demand what the people said that they promised they were going to do once they get in office. We have that right, and we're not given that right. And, you know, we've seen some movement from Trump, and he's done some things. I won't totally, you know, disavow the man yet. I mean, the January 6th thing, I know people that are out of jail right now that would still be in prison, right? But at the same time, you know, wars still going on. Debt still going up. Inflation, it's over 3%.
So. Yeah. Yeah, and, I try to have empathy for him because, you know, it's always easier said than done. But, like, you have the American army at your disposal. What are you, what is the whole, what is the problem here? Like, and you know what? If we got to take it on the chin, who cares, man? if we're not going to make it out, it's like there's a sunk cost fallacy I feel like we're stuck in now, especially with Ukraine.
That's the religion of our government.
Yeah.
Is the sunk cost fallacy.
Where it's like now Trump wants to get like the precious metals out of Ukraine, all the, you
but
know.
But they're all in the Donbass. They're all in the disputed region, and that region is going to go to Russia.
And at the end of the day, I think if you ask the average American, like, would you be okay with just ending the Ukraine war?
They don't know where Ukraine is.
It's like, yeah, and I would be, it's like, oh, Russia won. Who cares? Let Russia, give Russia all of Ukraine. I don't care. Right. I don't care about Ukraine. I don't dislike Russia. I'm sick of all of my money being stolen. And it's like, it's death by a thousand cuts, or maybe put another way, it's like the Gordian knot, where it's like, USAID is robbing us. SNAP benefits are sucking us dry. We got illegal immigrants by the millions on these. The voting system is screwed up. The wars overseas are endless and constantly starting up again. And it's like all of these little problems that, like, if you try to untangle it, it's just like I just want to slash through it with a knife and just go, you know what? I'm president of the United States.
And that's
we're no longer at war in Ukraine.
That's what we were promised with DOGE. You know, that's what we were promised with all these programs. And those things kind of get shut down. And then it just becomes, yeah, it's the industry of war. It's a good thing that we ran out of bombs, not from a supply chain issue or a stockpile munitions level. Oh, we ran out of bombs. That's really bad. It's good because we have to order more.
Right.
Like, that's what it's all about. It's about spending more money so the stock market goes up because they need some variable they can point to and go, look how good we're doing.
Yeah, and most of that is literally paying for, like, at this point, basically weapons manufacturing is the only manufacturing we do. And it's also, weirdly, like, one of the only industries that actually employs Americans because you can't have H-1Bs when it comes to national security.
Speaking on the rare earth minerals, which is very important, you know, there's been a United States policy for a while, and I heard, I think it was Scott Ritter talk about this, that if you get, like, a medical pack or something, and it's got, you know, Band-Aids in it, it's got antibacterial cream in it, and it's got a Q-tip in it. That Q-tip, if it's made with American cotton, we put sanctions on that stuff. We won't send it to you, XYZ. China's going to start doing the same thing with the rare earth minerals, and I bet it'll even do that with the rare earth mineral people they work with in Africa.
Right.
So we're entering into a new age here, and you know, I still think we have time to correct course. I think maybe if the Ukraine war is graciously lost, like if we just kind of pack it in there, I think we might be able to still work with the Russians and do some stuff. But we need to be able to, not in a globalist sense, but in a rational sense, we need to be able to interact with the world. And I consider myself to, like, mostly be an isolationist, right? I don't want these military bases in places they shouldn't be. I don't want these little, like, skirmishes and black ops operations happening everywhere. But at the end of the day, we're still going to need to trade with people because there are things that we don't have. And you have to pick one. You have to pick China or Russia to be permanently mad at, because both of those countries are the only two major powers that have the rare earth minerals that we need for everything we use, right? So why are we mad at the Russians? Why do we pick fights with them? Why can't we just come up with a simple diplomatic arrangement? It's simple. The Europeans have fear-mongered and spread a narrative since the fall of the Soviet Union that Russia is both weak and that it's a threat to the entirety of Europe. So they go, oh, it's weak, you can crush it, but it's going to take us all over and kill us. And the U.S. kind of wanders in there as like the drunk stepdad. It's like, I'll take care of the problem. I'll deal with it. And now we've been in this horrific engagement and we spent over $300 billion on it.
And they think it's clever because it's, you know, killing Russians. And that's a great thing that we should be doing, which is, and it's only driving Russia.
Dehumanizing the enemy is always the first step.
And it's only driving Russia towards China. And that's another aspect that's sort of ubiquitous everywhere, is like the short term thinking. And I know
I do second, third, fourth order thinking.
You got to do that. I was like, man, we should have like a political party that's like the second order party or the third order party. It's like, we are the party that concerns ourselves with the consequences of our decisions.
Oh, yeah.
Can we have somebody do that? Because, you know, well, first of all, you don't want to talk about collapse, that article on the other side. I mean, this tells you, you know, who's winning this conflict. We can go to .com. One of France's oldest companies, a 600-year-old foundry, just went bankrupt because it, quote, could no longer cope with the explosion in energy prices. These guys survived the Middle Ages, dozens of wars, plagues, Nazi occupation, but could not survive Europe's current suicide pact.
Oh, we love it, and that's directly our fault and our responsibility because we blew up – oh, the Ukrainians, excuse me. We blew up Nord Stream 2, and that was the power source from Russia to Germany and lowered energy prices. Like, they're paying three times more now from us than they were before.
So it's, you know, it's just outrageous. And then we'll go to this video and I'll get your take on this, Rex, because this makes me mad. But clip 25, this is the type of thing I was going off today. It's like, we both, you know, I hate democracy. I really do hate democracy. I really despise it. And it really is the the bellwether for destruction of a civilization when you become overly democratic. But it's like, you know, whether it's the woman, you know, in Canada saying we are going to make resident school genocide denialism illegal, it's like we can't let these people vote. I don't know what we do, but like, you got to have to pass a test or something. We'll go to the video, and I think you'll understand what I mean. Clip 25 here. This is some New York City voters about what is really important to them. Let's watch.
I think what's really important and standing out for me right now is if we can take ourselves like a high level, like not say immigration, not say economy, not say all the hot talking points, and just ask ourselves, how are we treating our neighbors? Like, how are we treating one another? And is it okay that yesterday, on Saturday, 42 million of our neighbors no longer can feed themselves? It is okay. Is it okay that our neighbors are getting taken off the streets by ICE? Is it okay that gender-affirming care is being taken from young people who really need it to survive? Is it okay that the Supreme Court has now justified racial profiling? That's not how I want to treat my neighbor.
It's the mayoral election.
I mean, but like she has just demonstrated an inability to make a rational decision about the fate of our country. Like, she's like, forget the buzzwords like the economy and immigration. It's like,
you see, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, right? So she wants these things that are nice, that are, you know, rooted in biblical theology, right? You know, do unto others and all that, and golden rule. But at the same time, that's not how you run the country. And this is the feeling. This is what I talk about, the Star Wars narrative of like Ukraine, Russia, and stuff like that. It's like, we are the good side, and we're the fairy rebel angels, and we fight against the evil monster man. Like, this narrative, it doesn't work out in real life. It's not real.
The problem is, she's like, you know, how we treat our neighbors, you know, we're so concerned that 42 million people were taken off food stamps. No, the concern should be that there's 42 million people who can't feed themselves. That's the problem. Now, how we fix that problem, we can discuss how to get there, but like, that's the problem, is they don't see the 42 million people being on SNAP as a problem. It's the fact that they're not going to be on SNAP anymore. That's the problem to them. And it's like, what is the second order effect? How about being on SNAP is not a good thing, and we should try to get less people on SNAP, and how do we achieve that? But we can't, because these people don't understand second order effect. And it's just like, but if they expect food, you have to give them food, and you just should. Then she says, our neighbors getting scooped up by ICE. Is that how we want to treat our neighbors? They're illegal immigrants. They broke the law. Yes. Yes. If my neighbor is an illegal immigrant, if my neighbor goes on vacation and somebody else moves into their house and squats in their house, yeah, I want that person removed. That's actually being nice to my neighbor, because the guy who's not my neighbor is taking advantage of them. Like, it's just, I've never been like more disillusioned in democracy than hearing that right there. When she's like, what are the things most important to you? It's she wants more people on food stamps. She wants illegal immigrants to not be arrested, and she wants gender affirming care for children. And it's like, we're dealing with an economic collapse. We're dealing with like violence in the streets.
Yeah, go ahead.
And it's like, and she's concerned about gender transitions for children. Like, she should not be allowed to vote. I don't know what sort of mechanism we need to do to deprive her of the right to vote, but she has presented herself as incapable and unfit to wield that responsibility. Okay? Am I wrong?
I don't think you're wrong, Unc. I don't think
you're wrong. I mean, am I wrong? I mean, what, you know, but what do we do? Because it's like, okay, do we really want to disenfranchise people? The other thing I was saying was like, okay, when you drop in 80,000 Somalis to a single district and they all vote for the Somali guy.
I totally agree with that. I mean, like, that's – talk about buying an election. You're just like, oh, yeah, we're just going to – you know, this small little county here, we're going to move all these refugees here, like, right away.
And that's just their seat from then on, yeah. But that's the thing. It's like, So what do we do? How do we?
We love our Somalis.
How do we paint? We how do we Muslims, track a path into the future? If yeah, man, your dad called it on that one. The Somalis, so good, so sweet. How do we chart a path into the future if all these people are just they're mad they're not getting their gimmies right now?
Well, you know, it would be great if we could just laugh at them and go, you know, these people are so stupid. Look at all the actual wins that we have. We had wars being ended. If we had, you know, Americans having more money in their pocket, if we had inflation lower, if we had, you know, these big tech companies not getting all this funding. Look, I don't agree with her position. I don't think that we should have 41 million like unemployed Ricardos on the food stamps. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, people do need to eat. and the government shut down right now, and it's Democrats' fault, but it's still something where they're able to point and go, look, this is why you need to vote for us. And a huge portion of the American electorate are low propensity, means they don't vote often, and they're like they're uneducated on the political topics, and they'll go with whoever sounds the nicest. So I feel like we've given these people a lot of wins over the past year. I've been observing more and more of the wins, and it's what makes me so disillusioned with the Republican Party in general, especially with Trump. Just the war thing, if we were able to say, hey, we stopped the death here, like that would be great. And you can go, oh, ceasefire this, ceasefire that. I'm talking about Ukraine. I'm not even talking about Gaza. And I'm going to keep talking about Ukraine. And you keep listening to me talk about Ukraine, because this won't stop for at least another year. Newsflash, red alert, put on the thinking cap. It's thinking cap time. Little Zelensky will get murdered by the Azov Battalion people if he ever surrenders. The Europeans are full throat on this whole thing, and Trump just simply doesn't care enough to stop it. So this is where we're at now, and it makes me really, really mad. It makes me really, really upset that this isn't the constant narrative. I heard my dad do a show a week or two ago, and he was talking about Ukraine and why everyone talks about Israel. Ukraine should be the focus. You know, I kind of agree with that. The more and more I learn about the ongoing situation, I mean, we're real close to nuclear war every day, and it's only thanks to the restraint of the Russians that we are not in it. So it makes me very mad that you got all these people that show up and go, why isn't that lady screaming and crying about nuclear war? Why isn't that lady screaming and crying about the money being sent over there? She doesn't know anything about it, and I guarantee she supports it. It's really weird. I see people, they go, I support Palestine and I support Ukraine. And like, I'll be honest with you, and we probably don't agree with this. Like, maybe we do. I support Palestine. I do. I think that they've been wrong. It's kind of like the Native Americans, right? They're put on a reservation. Now they have to leave that reservation. So the Ukrainian virus, the Ukrainian thought bubble that everyone has about them being like rebel alliance fighters, they are literally the Nazis, the stormtroopers. They are evil. And like, I truly believe this. Just the preponderance of evidence alone, just look at the situation. Look at the 2014 coup. Look at where we're at now. They bombed those people in the Donbass for like close to a decade. I mean, come on, guys. And we're expected to just love this and cheer for this. American electorate, like that lady, just so uninformed, man. Just so uninformed. Stupid.
And Trump gets elected in the war. Now we're 10 months in, and seems like we're deeper in the war than ever. More on the other side, folks. Don't go anywhere. War Room continues in just a few minutes.
End of video.
All right, folks, welcome back. This is the War Room. We're looking at some incredible footage right now. Incredible in a bad way. UPS flight 2976 crashed around 5:15 p.m. local time today at Louisville Muhammad International Airport in Kentucky. This was a UPS flight, so only three people were on board, luckily, but the explosions that were captured from a bunch of different angles are just incredible.
Never seen anything like it.
I've never seen anything like this either. This video, you'll see the plane here start to
blows up on the runway.
Take off. It looks like it gets to about the end of the runway when you start to see the explosion, and it just grows and grows. So I guess this plane was probably at you know, full speed when it exploded, and so it's left this gigantic flaming trail of debris through Louisville, Kentucky. And I'll just keep scrolling through some of these videos because you can see the pillar of smoke.
It completely blots out the sky.
Completely blocking out the sky. Here's the moment the plane crashes in Louisville, Kentucky.
Oh, is this the crazy one?
This is a crazy one.
Look at that. Look at that, guys. Boom.
I mean, it looks like an airstrike because it, and I guess, you know, it was flying to Honolulu, Hawaii, so it was fully loaded up with
jet fuel.
With jet fuel, something like 200,000 gallons of jet fuel exploding in, yeah, looks like a scene from Apocalypse Now.
That's got to be the loudest noise in the world whenever that goes off. I mean, are we really saying that only three people have died? Or like, is that truck driving close to it in that first clip? I mean, I can't imagine that guy's okay.
Here, this is the aerial shot where you really see the scale.
This just happened.
This just happened minutes ago.
Minutes ago.
But look at that. I mean, it looks like a rift to hell. I mean, you know, it actually reminds
Hillary's
me.
Hillary's going to come out of it.
Yeah. No, it reminds me of the shots from the derailment in East Palestine.
Oh, we don't talk about that anymore. Oh, yeah. Vinyl chloride in the air and water. Oh, we don't talk about that.
Yeah. Well, we're reliving it right now. So this is Louisville, Kentucky. There's a shelter-in-place order because of the toxic fumes. There's another aerial shot. I mean, that is catastrophic. And, of course, this is a major point of contention right now because the air traffic controller, you know, unions are saying this shutdown is destroying us and it's going to get dangerous. And they're talking about shutting down airspace. Of course, we don't know what actually caused this crash yet. And it looks like it crashed right at the moment of takeoff with the engine catching on fire. But I would not be surprised if this has something to do with the lack of personnel available in airports. Again, we
hear about this getting worse and worse and worse. And, you know, I may fly and do some things later this year. I may go on Lemon Party, which is in Los Angeles, and have a good time with Ben Avery. But stuff like this, it makes me real hesitant to not fly. I got to be honest, or real hesitant to fly, I should say. I dropped two friends off at the airport yesterday, and I was like, yeah, be careful, guys. Have a good flight. But you're getting in a metal tube that's apparently poorly maintained, very poorly maintained. And then you've got the air traffic controllers that are either not paid or like on leave. It's like that scene in Breaking Bad where the dude's having a bad day and he causes that.
Yeah. The air traffic controller. I mean,
right.
A couple seconds of, you know, not paying enough attention. So yeah, that.
But this is why the computer will do it, and the data center is so important, right?
AI. We need AI flying all of our planes. This is wild. So we really don't know much about this now. We'll bring you any new information as we get it. This was from earlier today. Department of Transportation might be forced to shut down airspace next week. You will see mass chaos.
Number one country in the world, folks.
Uh-huh. I mean, it is one of those things that, like, people take for granted what we have in this country. And I don't think they're ready for a world where, like, you can't trust your transportation. You can't trust your police to show up. It's like people think of collapse and they think of this, like, you know, purge, or like, you know, the grid goes down and everybody suddenly scrabbling for food. No,
it really is everything being automated breaking.
The collapse is the slow degradation. I mean, look at Rhodesia, which is now Zimbabwe. Look at South Africa, where you have over half of the population entirely dependent on government assistance and something like 5% of the population actually employed in the private sector. I mean, the path that we're on can extend infinitely. It can just get worse and worse and worse and worse, and things degrade and degrade and degrade to where we're not very far from, you know, having to say a prayer and cross your fingers and carry your lucky rabbit's foot anytime you get on the plane, because getting to your destination is not guaranteed anymore. We're so used to things just working. I don't think we're prepared when things just don't work.
Yeah, and then it's a perfect example. You got a company like Boeing, right? And Boeing used to be run by engineers, used to be run, you know, for making the finest products, making the finest commercial aircraft and military tech as well, but on the commercial side. Then you have the profiteering come in of, oh, you get a bunch of CEOs that are finance guys that are, you know, save the money, find the money guys. And they go, look, we're just going to cut the quality down a lot. And then once we do that, you know, no one will really notice our planes are still good planes. But over time, over, you know, the couple decades that's been the case, the company culture gets ensconced in that. And then what you get is a completely broken, like, vestigial thing that's supposed to work and has all this great history. So people trust it and they get in these planes and they die.
Yeah. Well, and remember when the Colonial Pipeline, I think it was called the Colonial Pipeline, right?
Mm-hmm.
Shut down, and they literally did not have anybody that knew how to manually shut it down. So, like, the electronic system failed and there were no engineers with the knowledge of how the thing actually worked to be able to repair it. So it was down for like a really long time.
This is why if you're young and you have the opportunity to learn some sort of artisanal trade or some sort of actual, like, you know, specific or niche, like ham radio operator, stuff like this, like bygone things that are really valuable and may become extremely valuable again, but things that people have just forgotten about. I mean, like, I look at like an electrician or even like a plumber or someone that's very, very smart. You can't not be smart on a technical level to get that job, right? And then you see all the adults, like male and female, like essentially in an adult daycare.
Yeah.
Right. And like my life is ridiculously soft and easy. All I have to do is manage a warehouse. And that's just boxes, right? But people that are in charge of doing the real technical skill work, those are gonna be the new heroes of society. And that's coming.
Yeah, and you know, it reminds me of is the remember the submarine that imploded.
Yeah, Blue Ocean Horizon or whatever.
Yeah. The Titan sub. Right, that guy, same thing that Boeing's go through. He's like, I don't want these old boring white guys. We're not hiring you old boring white guys. And it's like, well, the old boring white guys are the ones with institutional knowledge and engineering experience. So, like, that's who you – but the people with the knowledge are literally, like, being fired and replaced with some, you know, Indian with a degree from a degree mill. And they're wondering why the planes are falling out of the sky. It's like, what do you expect when you're cutting corners like this?
The problem with all this stuff is that there's totally enough money to fix it. There's totally enough money to run the company well, just like these fast food places that use all the artificial dyes and the crazy preservatives.
Yep.
You could not do that. You could make like 10, 20% less, but it's like Rockefeller said, one of his famous quotes is, how much money is enough? A reporter asked him. He said, one more dollar.
Right, right.
Yeah. So like, that's what it's all about. It's all about literally squeezing the pennies and the life out of the American people at the same time. And we just get used to this level of service, right?
Yeah.
But I went out to the Domain and I went to a nice pizza place. I went to Grimaldi's and I went and had pizza with someone and we got two pizzas, $100. $100. It's like a steakhouse or something.
Wow.
Say, oh, it's nice pizza. It's expensive. Yeah. In 2016, I feel like if I went there, I would have paid like $30, $40, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's reached a level now where you can see it in everything. You can see it in the fast food prices. You can see it in the electronics prices. Things that we looked at as cheap and great value and things that have become, you know, so much less expensive than they were before. It's all climbing up there.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, and just, again, you know, sometimes, I don't know, sometimes you just get a series of bad luck, but like there was a time a couple weekends ago where I was just trying to run some simple errands and it was just like, how does nobody know anything? Like nobody knows anything.
Oh, nothing. Yeah, the employees just like wandering around.
The employees have no idea what I'm talking about. They're like trying to search stuff and I'm like, I can search this myself. I don't need you. Like you're not even as good at searching as I am. Like,
so
don't worry
nice
about that.
When you go in the store and they just give you a little headset and the AI is like, hi, I can see exactly where you are right now.
Is that a thing?
I'm just making it up.
It's
sure
going
to be.
It's going to be soon.
Startup idea for the globalists for a new control mechanism if they want to steal that from me. But you'll have a little headset you put in and it'll just say, I have mapped your location in the Home Depot.
Yeah, dictate where to go.
All you're looking for is on 37B. People go, oh, that's great. That's fantastic. I want to be able to find the item. No. No, because every time you see the control to the thing, it's just like AI making people dumber. You're not using your brain.
Well, so, and you're also, you know, what always gets me is like you used to go to the airport and you check in at the check-in desk,
right?
And you just go, here's my bags, plop, here's my ID, plop, and then the guy behind the counter would do it for you. Then they remove that guy. They put in a self-checkout thing. So I'm standing there with my bag and trying to tag everything and trying to tag the bags. I'm
incorrect,
lugging them myself.
Incorrect.
And it's like,
yeah.
Okay, so you've just put the burden on me. You've just offloaded the work that you're used to paying an employee to do onto me. I noticed that my ticket didn't go down any lower. My ticket went up.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, things are less convenient and they're more expensive and everything follows this path. Like, how is that possible?
We're talking about America. We're bitching about America. Let's go, excuse me for the bad word. Let's go to this tweet from this Drew guy. I believe he's from Australia. See the Ukrainian.
Oh, this is a crazy story.
I see the Ukrainian flag in the bio. I don't like that, to be honest. Please help me. I am being raped as we speak. The LNP-controlled Brisbane City Council is threatening to bankrupt him over the blank sign protest I held outside the Chinese consulate 3 years ago. They took me to court over the sign. I sadly lost. They now demand I pay $23,000 and some change as punishment. I offered to serve 3 months in the prison. They refused, and instead they want to pursue him for bankruptcy. Oh, where have we heard that before?
Mm-hmm.
It's just civil court. We're your friends. Come on. Like, they send you to jail, and they ruin your ability to live a life by putting you in all this debt, right? Please contrast the vigor the Australian state now displays in their attempt to destroy me over a blank sign with their complete lackadaisical approach to finding the crackhead who broke into my car and stole my wallet in July. Oh, that's not important, mate. It's not important at all.
Let's be clear here. And I think this, I think he has a picture on it. This guy held up a blank sign. He held up a sign with no words on it. And he has now been given a $23,000 fine for this, because that's what happens when you don't have free speech. A blank sign is considered offensive, and he is now being pursued with vigor, as he points out.
Right.
Classic anarcho-tyranny.
And look here, a jihadi with previous criminal convictions for ISIS recruitment. Oh, isn't that fun? Wave the Al-Qaeda flag over the Sydney Harbor Bridge, and nothing happened to him. What we can really take from this, guys, is free speech is so important. And we talk about how bad things are here in America. We have to fight like hell to preserve the few rights that we have, because you look at a place like this, Australia, they got some of the best culture, some of the best people, some of the best MMA fighters, people like Volkanovski. And they are in this completely cowed society where they can't do anything. He can't even hold up a blank sign. But a crazy Muslim guy can go wave the Al-Qaeda flag. If you're going to have speech restrictions in your society, which you shouldn't have, it makes your society an authoritarian state. But if you have them, shouldn't they be applied at least somewhat equally? But we're talking about the nation that like forced vaccinated people and sent people to jail for COVID protests. So boo Australia, L Australia, W Australian people, we love you. But your government is one of the worst. I think they may even be worse than the UK. The UK is a real bad place. I mean, Keir Starmer and the stuff they do over there. I mean, that meeting he had with like JD or Trump, and he's like, yeah, it's that. Censorship, it's not cool, you gotta stop it. Oh, we don't censor, we have free speech, we have free speech here in the UK. I mean, that's such a lie. You have these police officers that run around with no guns and little yellow vests that go to a girl's door because of a social media post, but then just like ignore or watch a stabbing. But we're a righteous government and we support the people.
Yeah, and that's the, I mean, it's better to have no laws than selectively enforce laws.
I agree with that, actually.
It's the worst out of all the options. And like, so, like, if you have law where, like, the law is the law, and if you break it, you break it, and you get punished, like, great, fine. Everybody's subject to it equally. Or when you have anarchy and hell, you know, some guy breaks in my house, I get to kill him and bury him in the backyard, and there's nobody to tell me otherwise, great, I'll defend myself. Right. But it's the selective enforcement, the anarcho-tyranny. And people say two-tier, but it's beyond that. It's the same thing will be legal for a minority to do, and it's illegal for – it's even worse. We showed a video the other day from the UK where people were being arrested for waving Palestinian flags, for participating in a pro-Palestine march. This guy's walking around with a microphone going, I'm advocating for the genocide of the Palestinian people.
I was sure
people.
With you. We watched that clip. Yeah.
I want them to kill the women and children.
To the police.
And the police are going, that's your free speech. You have a right. While they're literally physically hauling off somebody for waving a flag. So it's like it's beyond just like two-tier policing. It's inversion.
When will the Europeans do something about this? I mean, they're so weak. They're the only people on the planet weaker than us. And it truly is crazy to put up with this in your society. I mean, look, we criticize people all the time. I don't think an angry Shaniqua would put up with this. You know,
Hey, speaking of, should we go to that video? Have you seen this?
No, I haven't.
This is righteous. It's good. It's actually exactly.
Oh yeah, I know what you're gonna go to.
You know what you're talking about? You know what I'm talking about? Clip 27. This is the energy that we need. I think Rob Dew pointed this out, where he's like, sometimes you need the angry black lady energy to get stuff done. Let's go to clip 27 now.
Adults, men, grown men with big in the women's locker room. And that's why I'm getting kicked out. And I want to make sure the girls know. So
normally when we're showing videos of, black women getting angry inside business establishments, it's not to celebrate them. Different this time. This woman is exactly right. She was kicked out of a gym for complaining that there was a man in the women's locker room. So she letting everybody know that there's a man in the women's locker room and she's not happy about it. That's what we need. We need people not taking this quietly. I got to say, it's actually a criticism of like white people. We really do have the biggest problem with this, which I always say we need like the Jewish mom energy, where like white people, if they find out something's happening they don't like, there's a propensity, and this is just, you know, it's a stereotype and whatever. But, you know, it's the propensity to go, I don't like that, you know, quietly kind of like give each other the look and go, this is kind of. But it's like, no. When you see your child being taught something you don't believe in, you need to be in the classroom, in the teacher's face, demanding satisfaction, like the way a stereotypical Jewish mother or black woman would do. You need to not be quiet. You need to not be silent when you are right and righteous and angry about something. And like the American people don't do that correctly. We don't do
They do it about the wrong issues.
Exactly.
As well. And that's what's very important to realize is we spend all this time getting upset over things that are domestic, and the domestic things are really bad, but the foreign stuff is even worse. And if we don't realize this is a society where our money has gone, I mean, there's a limit to how much we could print. Maybe we could print more now and fix this whole scenario, or at least attenuate it. We're heading towards a scenario where people talk about 2028, they talk about JD versus AOC or whoever they'll decide to run at the end of the day. I hope we get there, because the way things are going, the way prices are going, when you lower inflation as Trump has done, you're not getting rid of the increased price. You're just slowing down how much it increases in the future.
Correct.
And there's going to be a limit one day where people go, hey, I can't pay $8 for milk. I can't do that. I can't pay $20 for a pound of meat. I can't do it. I can't pay, you know, $10 for a little thing of rice. I can't do it. At the end of the day, like, what happens when our consumer culture that we've built kind of as a replacement for God, what happens when that goes away? And it's what you're talking about with the plane stuff. It's the anarchy that might set in. It's the craziness when none of these systems are maintained. I see it as almost unavoidable at this point, and that's why, like, we have a very prepared audience. We've always encouraged people to be prepared for the future. We're really heading into that time, and it's just like we talk about the show being shut down. People go, oh, the show isn't being shut down. The show's keep being in the studio. One day we won't be in the studio. And when that happens, people go, oh, we need to support. We realize now. I mean, it's a simple calculation, right, Harrison?
Yeah. And, you know, it's the same thing. Hell, we've been through it. It's like one of these days, like you can ignore it. You can brush off the consequences. One of these days, the murder on TV that you're ignoring
we'll
is going
to
be
home. Yeah.
Your family,
we'll come to your house,
your friends. And it's like, I'm not saying that just to fear monger, like it'll be you next, but literally, what is the other option? I mean, if everything is getting crazier, if violent crime is out of control and on the rise absolutely everywhere, and nobody's doing anything about it.
Because people don't know anything about the world. They don't know anything about the planet we live on. They don't know anything about real life experiences. And like, I'm sitting here, I'm not high and mighty about this, but at least I know what's going on across the globe. Most people don't know where any countries are on a map. They think Africa is a country and all this stuff. And you say, oh, like, you know, it is what it is. People are, you know, useless eaters, as Klaus Schwab or one of those people would say. But no, people are people, and people have a lot of value. When you deface the image of God like that to that degree on a mass scale, and you don't have that many good people left, you enter into a scenario where nothing can be fixed, because the people that are supposed to fix the thing, it's not even that they can't do it. They don't want to do it. They don't care.
Yep.
It's apathy, and it's nihilism, and it's the religion of death. It's, as Alex said, it's the boot stomping on the human face forever. And that's what hell is, and that's where we're approaching now if we don't do something about it. And like, that's why I love InfoWars. It's why I love you, my dad, Brianna Morello. I love all the shows. I watch every single one damn near, because I see us out here doing this every day, every week, every month, every year, continuing to go on and on and on as a success, as a victory. And with all the black pill stuff, we also have to realize all the people that we helped and saved during COVID from getting the shot, the Jan 6 people that have been freed, the election fraud that's been exposed, all of these things. These are all wins, and they do push us sort of in the right direction. But if we don't focus on the meta level stuff, which is all our money is going away and it's going to these foreign nations, they're going to lose their wars and be defunct at some point. And then all the talk about allyship and, oh, we need strong partners across the globe. We have the weakest partners across the globe. They're only sustained by our money. And when our money goes away, it's all over. And when it's all over in the foreign sense, where people won't buy our debt, it'll be all over domestically, where our economy will truly crash. And then it doesn't matter about the stock market and the AI and the data centers. And that's why they need to automate everything. That's why they need the robot. That's why they worship the robot. You can say it's bad to have Jose in the field, you know, doing the work, but it may even be worse to have Wally doing the work. And I think it really is worse to have Wally do the work, but that will be sold as a solution. We won't know how to do anything, and then the robot will come in, and the robot knows how to do everything, and they give us UBI.
Wow. Yeah. Powerful. Yeah. Yeah. You're exactly right. I mean, that is the way things are absolutely going. And
right.
as we collapse into the incompetency crisis, and we don't even have the institutional knowledge anymore, again, things are only going to continue to decrease. Now, we could reverse that at any point by prioritizing education, by not giving in to the, you know, race to the bottom that we experience across the board when your goal is equality, and it turns out it's a hell of a lot easier to tear down those on top than build up the ones, you know, underneath. We really need a full-fledged, like, worldview reset, where we go, look, we don't want people to be on SNAP. It's not nice to give them SNAP. It's, you want them to be self-sufficient and strong and self-reliant and independent. That's what freedom is. We don't want
people subjected to this stuff. You're treating people like animals at the end of the day. When you try to do everything for them, you're just trying to give them a path to slaughter. At the end of the day, like, you know, the cow is a life. The cow gets born. The cow gets taken care of. The cow gets weaned. The cow, you know, eats the cud and all that and drinks out of the trough. And then the cow gets shot in the head. And see, that's all a very pretty organized system of the world, right? For the cow is born, it lives its preordained life, and then it dies. And there's still an element of freedom to the world, and they want to get rid of that. They want you to be like the cow, and you just have your path, and you die. And hey, maybe that's what people want. If you can watch Netflix as the cow, if you can get DoorDash as the cow, yeah, you can smoke weed as the cow, you can do all these things, but eventually it's slaughter time. And we'll reach that point, especially sooner, if people are informed, people aren't screaming from the rooftops about it. So like, that black lady is angry about something, good. She should also be angry about this, and she should be on social media or doing a show. Everyone should do a show. And I heard Fuentes make the point, not to go off on a tangent, I heard Nick Fuentes make the point of, you know, you shouldn't really do a show. It's for very few select people. It can destroy your life, blah, 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 blah. Everyone needs to be talking about this stuff. Everyone needs to do a show. I completely disagree with that viewpoint that he gave, because how are we going to fix this? It can't just be one person, because people are going to die. People are going to be killed. People are going to whatever.
Yeah, you know what? Your dad had a caller, the Muslim caller today, who was talking about jihad. That's what we need. We need to be waging a righteous jihad, because what he was talking about was like,
Holy war.
You know, if what he was saying was like, if you go in and you work as hard as you can every day in your job, and you do that because you know that you're going to make money, that you're going to be able to contribute to the cause that you're working for, you are engaged in jihad. That's how he was putting it. And like, that's sort of how we need to be. It's like everything you do needs to be focused on the ultimate
goal.
Everything
you do must be jihad, Harrison.
Everything
Smith.
You do must be jihad. Your life must be righteous jihad for America. The crusade must encompass you and encapsulate your every being.
Now, is that radical, or is the path of the cow radical? And that's the choice you have to make in today's world. And I mean, Harrison, that's such a beautiful point you make. And just in closing, if anything you want to say?
I just think, you know, you don't have to have a show. You don't have to do what we do. Not everybody can do what we do. If you want to, I encourage you to do it. Learn a skill. Learn to edit. Learn to animate. Learn to make music. I mean, learn to talk to people in your work and introduce them to new ideas. I mean, people are dumb as bricks if you go out and start talking to them, but you can introduce them to things in a nice way, in a pleasant way, in a friendly way, not in a combative way necessarily. You can do so much as an individual,
right?
no matter what your skill level or education or anything.
And this is why, to a certain extent, even though, you know, I disagree with them on a lot of things, this is why Rogan is important. This is why people like that are important.
100%.
Because you have to wake people up to a little bit of the worldview before you give them the full red pill. Because, like, it's like Nick said, ODing on red pills.
Yeah.
That can happen.
Oh, yeah. You know, ODing on red pills.
Your tolerance is low enough.
Can be very bad. But when you introduce people to this, you're introducing them to meaning. Like, you're introducing them to a burden that they will celebrate carrying. It's really a beautiful thing, freedom. It's a beautiful responsibility. Rex Jones, follow him on X at Rex Jones News with a Z. Are you going live tonight?
Not tonight.
Soon,
Thursday,
very soon.
Thursday night. Join us Thursday night. Thank you very much.